Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, leave it in.
Another edition of Leaving the Ring. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, and the man behind the switchboard, our producer, Mr. David Chen. Well, I hope everybody's doing great, and I hope you enjoyed this past weekend fights. Saul Alvarez, El Canelo versus Kermit Cintron. Any surprises there? No, I didn't think so. Honestly, figured that's exactly the way it was going to go down. Mentioned it on the on the show last week that once the pressure kicks in, man, it's going to be really, really difficult for Kermit Cintron to step it up. You know, he's just had a history after, you know, history after history. The guy falls apart under pressure. It's just known, you know. We've seen him either jump out, fall apart. It's always something to an effect where, you know, I mean, I had the chance to, I was talking to Gabriel right after the fight, and I don't know about you guys, but his face expression tells everything. It gives you the whole picture of what the guy is exactly at that moment, what he's thinking, you know. And when Canelo was opening up and he was landing his combinations and he was being fluent with it, and that right hand was just starting to land now, just frequently and, you know, at will, you could see it in Kermit's face that it was getting to him, you know. And the thing what's sad is that this is how you know. I mean, he can be an athlete, but if you're not a fighter and you don't start at an early age, you're not taught the poker face. You know, a trainer's always going to tell you don't show your expressions through your face. You know, if you look at like Antonio Barrera, he was known to have a very solid poker face. You didn't know whether the guy was hurt, whether if he was anxious, whether he was going to go for the kill. He just kept a straight face at all times. And the reason is when you have too many face expressions, when you wince, when you smile, when you do this, you're giving the other fighter the advantage of knowing what's going to happen next. And when Saul saw Kermit Cintron kind of fall apart and his body language, it was just not even just his face, it was his body language, really. You know, when he was holding on those ropes, he was sitting in there, and he looked like he wanted help from the ref. I mean, I don't know. He was looking for Ronnie Shields maybe to jump in and kind of put him on his shoulders and walk him back. You know, I don't know what he was looking for. Was he looking for a Rocky Balboa, you know, speech? But whatever it was, Saul Canelo Alvarez was able to notice it and take advantage of it. I don't know what you thought, Gabriel, but to me, that's one of the biggest problems Kermit's had out throughout his whole career is that whole body language and face expression of telling the other guy what is on his mind.
That's an interesting point. You know, I was listening to you as I got on the line. That's an interesting point because, you know, like myself, I know, like you, I played a lot of sports growing up. You know, I played all the sports. I wasn't good at all of them, but I played them all. And I always prided myself on my poker face. You know,
right.
it was something that I don't even know if my dad taught us that, but it was, you know, he was a very competitive guy, taught us to be very competitive. When I was competitive, with playing pool, my friends would always ask me, do you even enjoy this? Because, like, I would, you know, go on a winning streak, I'd never break a smile. I wouldn't let you know if I was happy one way or the other. And it's just part of the game. But when I started boxing and started sparring in particular, I couldn't hide what I was going through, you know. If I screwed up and I could hear my trainer, like, yell at me, like, don't do this. Like, I would let it show on my face, and I would betray
right.
it. For whatever reason, with boxing, it is that poker face is something that gets ingrained early, I think. And it isn't something that you really necessarily learn when you start late, like you said. I don't know what it is, but maybe it's because somebody's hitting you in the face and body. You know, that kind of just beats the expression out of you. But regarding the fight, I thought they stopped it early. You know, I don't know if Kermit could come back, but I thought the fight was getting interesting. He looked very lackadaisical. I remember commenting on it at the weigh-in, and you and I were talking about it. And he didn't look very into it. He just kind of was like going through the motions, you know. There was no, throat-cutting gesture or, you know, I'm going to do good. I want to get up in your face and try to intimidate the kid. He didn't try to use his experience in that sense.
Right.
That's never really been his style. But, you know, and then in the fight, he was just very relaxed and calm, but there wasn't like a fire, you know, and he wasn't getting after it. And maybe Kermit's never really been like that, but you at least saw him throw some good shots early, and he didn't really seem to get into the fight until he got hurt. And then when he got dropped, all of a sudden he was coming forward and he was going for it, letting his hands go. And he landed some good shots on Canelo. It was actually, it was weird. It was like a button had been pushed. Like there was that
right.
one point where he was on the ropes and Canelo came in and he spun him and clocked him with a right. Like it was like, all of a sudden he was like, you know what? I'll be damned if I go out or easy. And people
you know
could
what,
say that his body language looked weird, but Kermit's
right.
always been weird at the waist and too far down.
Right.
He's always done that. It wasn't an unusual move from him. His head wasn't spinning around like a rag doll. I thought he was really hurt at the end of that one round. I mean, he was just sitting there on the ropes. I thought he was out, like on his feet. But and for a guy that's never really been hurt more than once, you know, he got hurt by Margarito, but I never really seen him like dazed other than like when Martinez dropped him and really had him on Queer Street to where he thought it was a headbutt, not a punch. This is probably the only other time I've seen him, like, visibly rocked by a shot that, like, had him out of his senses. But I just thought they stopped it early, you know? It was just like the
right.
Gomez fight. As soon as there was a challenge, I mean, don't you want to see your kid finish in adversity or get pushed a little bit? I mean, he's
I don't know. You know
what?
I got to tell you, I disagree with you, man. I honestly thought it was a good stoppage just because I just didn't see Kermit really trying to make a comeback. I mean, he's been known to, when he does get popped and he is in danger, you know, there is no lie when he decides to try to trade with you to get himself out of that situation. You know, he's a cat that definitely scratches his way out of a corner. But this time around, I don't think his claws were going to be sharp enough to get him out of there. You know, I thought, really honestly, the ref was seeing exactly what the world was seeing, was a guy that was just mentally is not there as a fighter, you know. Maybe as an athlete, and maybe he physically he was there, but I don't think mentally he hasn't been in the game for quite some time. And you know, I know he has a lot against the media of what they've said about him and how we've made fun of him, you know. But I don't think he's ever shooken that off, you know. You know, they say in order for you to move forward, you got to believe in yourself. And Kermit Cintron, to me, He just doesn't believe in himself. And when you don't believe in yourself, you're not going to make those accomplishments, and everything is going to be near impossible, you know. And Canelo was going to be near impossible for him to beat on Saturday night because the kid does not believe in himself, you know. So I thought it was a good stoppage. I say, why continue to let this man get punished for something that really, honestly, he's mentally not even there for, you know. He's going to walk away with physical damage rather than just going home, being in peace and stuff. So I thought it was a pretty good damage, man. I mean, a pretty good stoppage, in my opinion. And maybe it was because I just didn't want to watch it anymore, you know? I was just kind of sitting there like, all right, that's enough, you know? It's like seeing that one guy that just doesn't know how to fight, you know, really try to get out of a fight in a sparring session, and you're like, okay, dude, I've seen enough, you know?
Maybe
three rounds.
The guy fighting Adrian Broner.
Oh, God.
you know, I can see where you're coming from, but you know, these are fighters, and I guess there is the rationale of they know what they're in for. They're getting paid really good money to do this, and they're warriors, and we've got to let them go
right.
out on the shield. And, you know, there was an interview with Kermit the day after. I still haven't heard back from him, and I always kind of take that as a sign when he doesn't text me back and talk to me immediately. You know, we've talked over the years. He usually takes a little break after the fights and but he did an interview, I forget with who, and he basically did say, like, they kind of stopped it early. Like, I didn't feel like, I felt like I was just coming into the fight, you know. And like I said, I felt like he had gotten woken up. Did I give him a chance to pull it out? No. He looked kind of shaky in everything that he was doing
right.
after he got rocked. But, I mean, we saw that with Angulo and Kirkland, where you know, to me, you know, looking at Canelo's body, he carries a lot of muscle. And I didn't think he looked in particularly good shape. His body looked softer
right.
than I've seen it before. And they didn't show his weight, which means that he probably put on a lot of weight after the weigh-in and didn't want people to know how much weight he had put on, which to me is generally a sign that you've cut weight in a way that you didn't want to. And so you've packed on like 10, 20 pounds, similar to the way Chavez Jr. did. I don't care what they say about his work ethic, you know, and that he's in good shape. You don't come in 180 for no reason on a fight night. And so what I was curious about was Canelo was throwing at a higher rate than he had in a long time. He was taking shots. He was really letting his hands go, his combinations fly. I wanted to see what happened in 7 and 8, you know, or 6, 7, and 8, somewhere in
right.
there, like deeper in those rounds. What happens if the kid gets tired and Kermit gets a little confidence, gets a second wind, and kind of goes, you know what, let's go to work. This kid's tired. He just gave me his best shots. I'm still here. And he gets a little confidence. I mean, you know, you never know. Every guy has that night. And maybe Kermit's night was Angulo, you know, and that was it. We'll never know at this point. But to me, this one didn't seem like, oh, God, they need to stop it because he's in danger. It seemed like the fight's getting kind of heating up. Canelo's taking some shots. This is a good time to stop it because dude's on the ropes. He just took some hard ones. But he only landed that one right hand. Nothing else, you know, really landed after that. That's why I just kind of went. It wasn't like he ragdolled him on the,
right.
on the ropes. He caught him with a good right hand. And Kermit was eating shots flush, but Kermit always eats that right hand, you know? So I don't know. To me, it was. I wanted to see a little more.
I think the ducking of the body, the way he was bending his body over, also too made it might have influenced the ref a little bit, you know, because like I said, his body language really was, you know, if you've never seen Kermit fight before and it was your first time or reffing or you know being a judge at one of his fights, his body when he kind of like slouches over and he looks like he's just trying to get out of there. It's almost like being read as, I don't want to be in there. Save me. And I think that's what the ref kind of went off, and that's why it was a little bit maybe premature stop. I don't agree with that, though, like I said. But let me tell you this. I do agree with you about the whole gassing out of Canelo and looking a little soft, you know, because I've always said it. I don't think he's a natural 154-pounder or even moving up to 160. His legs, to me, carry a lot of that weight. They carry those extra pounds. If his legs were a lot thinner, they're not a traditional skinny legs of a boxer. They look more like a volleyball player, you know, not like a soccer player. Like if you look at Manny Pacquiao's legs, they have definition where, you know, Canelo has, you know, what is that, cankles? Do you have
no?
He's got cankles. You know?
He does have cankles.
Yeah, you know, you don't know where his knee begins and where it stops and stuff, you know. So. Just too much cinnamon down there, I think. That's what it is. Just too much cinnamon, you know. But anyways, you know, I mean, I'm still not – I like the kid. I think he does great combinations. I think he throws great combinations. And I think that with the right opponent, he's always going to look spectacular, you know. My whole thing is, though, is before I start praising Canelo, the cinnamon kid with the cankles, I want to see him fight somebody, you know, worthy. You know, I know he says he'll fight anybody, et cetera, but really? Would you? Would you really fight anybody? You know,
well,
James Kirkland.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't say James Kirkland.
No, he didn't.
He said a name he couldn't get. He said Floyd Mayweather. And Floyd ain't going to fight him. It's not going to happen. And you're absolutely right. Like, there's no evidence here. There's no... They just keep telling me this guy's really good, and Roy Jones and Max Kellerman keep saying, what a power puncher he is. He's got real – look at this kid. He's amazing. But look who he's fighting.
Right.
You know, I mean, and I'm a Kermit guy. I've always supported Kermit. And I didn't give him any shot to win this fight. I gave him a puncher's chance. And then within a few rounds, it was like, there went that chance. He's fought what, Matthew Hatton this year, Ryan Rhodes, and Kermit Cintron. And we're supposed to think, and he didn't, you know, it took forever for him to get Ryan Rhodes out of there. couldn't get Matthew Hatton out of there. I mean, I don't understand. I mean, you're from the same era as I am. We're about the same age. When I think of one-punch knockout power, you know, I think Julian Jackson. I think Felix Trinidad, Terry Norris, Mike Tyson even. You know, those are one-punch, if they catch you wrong or if they catch you right, depending on your point of view, you're over. You're done. And
Microcarbohol, you know, that's one punch.
Yeah, exactly.
Right,
Arturo Gatti, even, with that left hand.
Yep.
You know, there's nothing about Saul Alvarez that says one-punch knockout power. He's maybe heavy-handed. I'll give him heavy-handed. I won't, you know. Even the Alfonso Gomez fight, I mean, that thing was stopped way early. I thought it was way too soon. And I didn't give Gomez a shot in hell, but still, you know. Lovemore Ondu, you know, going into last year. You know, okay, Baldemir, everybody goes, wow, that was great. But the dude was, like, retired. They just kind of rolled his old bones out there.
Yeah.
And he was never really a 154-pounder to begin with.
Yep.
So, you know, I just don't – I'm not buying the hype, you know. I won't go so far as to, you know, we were boxing writers always like to make up nicknames. I came up with Cinnabum the other day. I won't go so far as to say he really deserves that nickname. I was just being funny. But I mean, I have to say that it just seems like smoke and mirrors right now.
Yeah, definitely. God, you know, somebody get the Windex out. Let's spray it. Please clear it up a little bit, you know. I know there's a lot of fight fans that are not real hardcore fight fans. They're more casual fans and are jumping on that wagon, you know, upset when we do talk about Canelo. Or when we tweet about him or put him on Facebook, you know. I get a couple guys that email me like, oh, you're hating on him. Why are you hating on him? Again, I'm going to say it again. I'm not hating on the guy. You know, when you want to see a fighter step up in level, especially when they have a title, when they're calling themselves a champion, you want them to fight the best. You know, you want them to keep continuously prove you wrong. There's nothing wrong with proving the guy or proving the naysayers wrong. So if I'm into that category of I'm being a hater, then I guess I am, just because I want to see the guy step up and fight somebody worthy. The other guys that he's faced, which you mentioned, Gabriel, are not guys that are worthy. I'm not going to call them bums. I hate that. I hate that term bums. You know, I had a few guys on Twitter, you know, use the reference as bum when they were talking about Gary Russell facing Mikey Garcia. You know, and I was throwing out there Mikey Garcia's – he's fought some of the top – you know, he's fought some very durable names. He's right now, to me, he's just a few steps ahead of – you know, Gary Russell, and I mentioned the guys that are a little lesser. And then you get some guys, well, yeah, those guys are bums. Well, then you answered your own question. That's why he's not in the same level yet, you know?
Yeah. Do I think he's very talented? And you know, I almost am a little higher on Gary. Just I like his skills, his ability to let his hands go.
Yeah, his speed is fantastic.
Yeah,
you know?
His speed, his skill set, his willingness to get in there, like, you know, there's kind of this wave of quote-unquote skill fighters that are kind of coming up. You know, your Adrian Broner is one of those guys. And with Broner, I mean, he can be very exciting. I think that the guys that he's fought, I mean, everybody went nuts about Liptau, but let's all be honest. Nobody gave him a chance to beat Caballero, not even Caballero, who trained like 3 weeks for that fight, looked like crap in that fight. And they've just kind of got caught at the right time by Liptau. It was like a 13-1 dog. And you know, I was really happy for him. He got that win. But to me, the real Jason Liptau was the guy that fought Broner. He doesn't really have much of a chin. He's wide open to shots.
Right.
And a speedy guy like Adrian Broner is going to take advantage of him. Caballero, you know, it's always styles make fights, was not that kind of guy. With anybody that he gets in with, he's going to be a volume puncher like a Yanni Perez. And it's going to take time for him, and he better be on his game in order to get you out of there. You know, even the soft touch is going to be rough for him if he's not prepared, and he wasn't.
Right.
But with Russell, he's one of these skill guys that I think is going to always be exciting. He's almost got that Kirkland mentality. He's going to come forward. He's going to throw a lot of shots. He's willing to get hit. But you're right. You know, like if you look at who's developing him versus who's developing Mikey Garcia, it just doesn't even compare. You've got top-rank who's brilliant at doing this. Not just developing draws, but developing fighters that are capable, that are well-rounded, that have faced a variety of styles and have been tested in a variety of ways by the time they arrive to the big stage. There's a reason why we haven't been inundated with Mikey Garcia blowing dudes out on HBO, because Top Rank just doesn't do it that way. You know, they take their time with their guys. The Matt Remillard fight is a perfect example. I mean, look at all the guys that Garcia fought last year and even into this year. And then they gave him a test. You know, they gave him, like, the rough veterans, Cornelius Locke, guys like that, that are going to give him a certain look, a certain amount of experience, that are there to win, that have lost, but you kind of have to remind them of why they're going to lose again. And then you give him a Matt Remillard, who was there thinking, you know, if I win this thing, now I'm the guy in the conversation.
Yep, I'm the guy to beat.
Yeah, he's young, he's ready to go. And that's a whole other challenge, is taking somebody's O who feels like I'm a prospect about to be a contender. We haven't seen that with Gary Russell. In fact,
Matt Remillard was a very high-praised prospect too, you know, or a lot of folks were very high on. It was a 50-50 fight where Gary Russell has not been in a 50-50 fight. Gary Russell hasn't even been in a fight where we could possibly say he could lose this one, you know. And that's what I don't get with some fans, where they sit there and they basically, you know, their assumption is already sold on that Mikey Garcia would lose to, you know, Gary Russell, when we haven't seen Russell in that kind of position where Garcia's been at, you know, where he had to really be focused and have a game plan and strike that game plan, where Gary Russell's really kind of just went in and used everything he has, because he knew he had the advantage, you know what I mean? He didn't have to restrict anything that he carries. He didn't have to reserve anything, because he knew he was going to be able to go out there and put his all on. My whole point, though, to a couple of these guys that were, you know, tweeting to me saying that, you know, his speed and he can do this when he wants to, you'll see. My thing is, when you have a guy that is a prospect that gets into the pro rankings and he's already getting hit with particular shots, And he continuously keeps doing it over and over and over, he ends up kind of falling into that style. He ends up molding himself into that style, which is no head movement. You know, take shots, eat shots to land the big ones that he needs to. That when it's time to change it up, guess what? He forgot how to change it up, because he's so used to doing the same thing over and over and over again. That's what some fight fans just don't understand. They're a little bit too caught up with the hype. They're a little bit too caught up with the pizzazz of a fighter, that they don't look at everything as a whole, you know? And that's the only thing that I say. Look at everything as a whole. I'm not praising one guy more than the other. I like Gary Russell. I want him to succeed. I think the guy has tremendous talent. One of the most exciting prospects we had in a while, you know? But I don't want to rush him. I would not want to see him jump in with Mikey Garcia. Not at this moment. Maybe he may win, but it's going to be a hell of a win for him, you know, and something he's never been tested with. Those are some waters there, that some dark water right there that he's not going to want to just dive into, you know.
Well, the thing is what people don't get, you know, what they saw this weekend, which I found very interesting. It was kind of the last raid of Kerry Davis, Golden Boy, and Al Haymon on HBO. You know, maybe not the very last one, but certainly the last of the year, and kind of the last under the previous regime. This was the end of the output deal, the exclusive output deal that Golden Boy had. This was the last show of that deal. But also, you know, Kerry Davis is something of a lame duck director over at HBO now that Ross Greenberg's gone. They've got, you know, Ken Hirschman, who's probably going to bring in some of his own people over to HBO now that he's taking over. And so, you know, what people don't get is this was actually supposed to be a triple header. Gary Russell kept passing on good opponents. And from what I understand, from what I was told by someone close to the situation. And so they decided, because they wouldn't take on a top-level opponent or even, you know, an acceptable opponent, that he would be left off TV. And because Adrian Broner blew out his soft opponent for his title belt, no less, they had time to fill. And so we got to see Gary Russell on TV, even though he wasn't supposed to be, because we knew that he would blow his guy out, which he did in one round. And that's why they were able to fit it in. But that's what you were watching on Saturday night. You really weren't watching a title fight. I know it was for a vacant belt, but let's be real. You know, it was about as valid as, you know, as having the Berto fight with the Mikey Rodriguez fight. You know, where he took on a guy that we never really heard of and we probably weren't going to see again.
Exactly.
And you know, he got ranked. You know. And was able to fight for that vacant belt, but we all knew that the star in the making, Berto, was going to be the one that was going to pull this out. And you know, it was a fun fight. I won't deny that. But and you know, with Broner, it was a good knockout. But it was kind of like an introduction to, okay, here's going to be our next generation star. He's going to get a highlight reel knockout, pick up his first belt.
It's going to
be a historic moment.
Hey, Pops, and, bring me my comb. Pops, bring me my comb. Dude, how cheesy was that? How cheesy was that? I was like, I actually felt embarrassed for the dude. You know what I mean? I was like, really, man?
For the dad or Broner?
Bro, you know.
I mean, if my son ordered me on TV to, you know, this is why I don't have kids. If my kid ordered me to comb his hair on TV, I would walk over and I would hit him with the comb.
I would throw the comb at my own kid, you know, and just tell him like, dude, come on, man, you know, Max, you know, slap him, please, just 5 o'clock
like
the eye, give him a 5-finger discount. I don't care. We got a great show for everybody out there that's listening. If you want to call into the show and speak to us here on Leaving the Ring, you certainly can. You can speak to me, Dave Duenas, or my co-host Gabriel Montoya, but you got to speak to David Chan before you get patched in to speak to us. That's the way that things work here on Leaving the Ring. Phone number is 347-215-7598. We got Robert Garcia, the head trainer of the Antonio Margarito camp, who's got a fight coming up this Saturday on the 3rd at Madison Square Garden in New York City. Hey, I tell you right now, wear your bulletproof vest. Be careful for the riot gear cops. And don't act a fool, because you're in New York. The cops will beat you down. They're like the light rail police, you know what I mean? They got a chip on the shoulder. They will use, you know, some excessive force on your ass if you act out like a fool. But anyways, we're going to patch in Robert Garcia. We're going to call him in a little bit. Then we got Andre Berto, who got a title again. And we're hearing some rumors about a rematch with Victor Ortiz. Then a little later, we got Benny Ricardo, the commentator for some of the pay-per-views, does a fantastic job. He's going to give us his take and his breakdown of the Cotto and Margarito. I know a lot of folks want to talk about that rematch. Not only that, on the same Saturday night, Arbeco versus Morris, the rematch there. Another great rematch, Rodriguez-Wallach. That's going to be a fantastic fight. Saturday night, man, is just going to be stacked after stacked after stacked. I hope you got your DVR working, man, because it's going to get burnt out with all the letter being thrown on Saturday night. I'm excited. I know Gabe's excited, and I know the rest of the hardcore boxing fans around the world are excited about Saturday night, man. It's definitely going to be explosive. I wish I was in New York, but unfortunately, I got a big old Mexican flag on my back, man, that I don't want to be thrown off a balcony if anything happens, you know, anything goes down. You know what I mean, Gabe?
I'm going to be safely in the Mecca of boxing, Anaheim, California. So there's no chance of me getting thrown out. Well, actually, there is, because I'll be all alone with Oscar De La Hoya and his crew. So I may have my credentials ripped off me. I may get slapped like an ugly woman and thrown outside. I don't know.
Not
we'll
all.
See what happens.
Yeah, can I please speak to Robert?
This is Robert.
Roberto, ¿qué pasó, brother? This is Dave Duenas and Gabriel Montoya on Leaving the Ring. How you doing, brother?
Hey, how you guys doing? I'm doing good.
So how, is it snowing over there, or is it just really cold in New York?
No, it's actually not. It's cold, but not freezing cold. It's not that bad.
Because, you know, you're a southern guy, man, you know, Southern California, so we're not really used to that kind of cold. We got some chilly weather nights, but not that kind of chilly.
No, I hate it over here. Well, the weather is not like it, but it's not that bad, actually. It's actually been all right. Not that bad.
Hey, let me ask you this. Are the Puerto Ricans, are they dogging you guys out over there, man, and giving you dirty looks when you guys are walking by?
Actually, not at all, man. Not at all. We actually been all right. They haven't been doing much. No, they actually been pretty cool.
Let me ask you my first question, and I'll pass it over to my co-host. My first question here, Robert, is, this is my concern about this fight here, man. And I honestly think that Margarito can take this fight just based on that Cotto to me hasn't changed a bit. You know, I still think he has a lot of problems with guys with pressure, and especially a big guy with pressure. Like the first time around they had met when they got in the ring against each other in Vegas. But my concern is this, is that the New York City Commission, they got involved in this because of the eye. And to me, that told me, they kind of showed me a lot of concern coming on their part that if that eye is tagged a little bit too much, this fight may be premature. Are you guys worried about that?
No, not at all. You know, we had three doctors telling us that there was nothing wrong with the eye, that if anything happens to the eye, you know, it's because of boxing, and the same thing could happen to the left eye. Same thing could happen to Cotto's eye, because it's boxing, you're getting hit. But the eye is 100% ready. That's what the doctors told us. So we feel very, very confident because of that.
But my thing is that they did that whole getting the eye tested, and then you guys have that. So they got three doctors all claiming that his eye is fine. But my thing is that they did it to kind of save their ass, if anything, but they're not willing to find out. Like, they're not going to be willing to find out whether or not it is in good health to continue in the fight. You know, where I'm not sure if maybe they're telling the referee or the ring doctor to really keep an eye and maybe, you know, just get overexcited and jump in and stop possibly a great fight between those two guys.
Well, you know, like I said, you know, the doctor said, okay, Margarito says he feels great. So that's what we're going from, you know, because the doctor said, okay, Margarito says he feels great, and he's actually been showing it during training. He's we asked Spartan Punch to throw that left hook often, and he was seeing the punch. He was making it miss, so we feel very confident.
Absolutely.
Hey, Robert, this is Gabe Montoya, Max Boxing.
How are you doing, Mike?
I'm doing good, man. It's kind of a tough question. I'm not even particularly comfortable asking it, but I feel like I should. You took a lot of criticism after the Pacquiao fight for not stopping the fight sooner. People thought, you know, after those last three rounds that the fight could have been stopped. And there's some speculation that maybe that eye wouldn't be so messed up now or had so much problems had you guys stop it. Do you regret not stopping it?
Yeah, but you know what, Gabe, the thing is, you know, after the fight, after a fight, and after somebody loses, everybody sitting ringside, everybody watching the fight live knows more than the trainer. Everybody says, oh, I would have done this, oh, he should have done this, he should have done that. They're doing the same thing right now with Nacho. Oh, why did Nacho advise Marquez to move on, because the fight's already yours. Well, he was right. The fight was his, and they just didn't give it to him. You know, Margarito, every time he came to the corner, he would show us that he still wanted to continue. It wasn't just me. His managers agreed, you know, to the same thing. The doctor came in and pointed out, you know, fingers at Margarito, and Marta would tell him how many fingers he was holding up and everything. The ref was there also. And then when a fighter like Margarito gives you that positive attitude and that energy that he wants to continue, me as a trainer, I think, you know, he deserves the right to finish. We didn't know his bone was broken. We didn't know that damage was done until when the doctor said it after the fight. But you know, if I would have known, well, you know, that happened in the fourth round, so it was, you know, it was already damaged anyway. But he was, you know, he was responding. He was responding to the doctor. He was responding to the ref. To me, we were talking about it in the corner with the managers, you know, about stopping the fight. But when he came to the break, when the bell rang and he came to the break, he would always show us that he wanted to continue, and he was that he was okay. He was responding to everything that we were asking him, and he was never, you know, he hadn't been dropped. He hadn't been stabbed. He hadn't been hurt where he was wobbly or on his way down. So why not give him a chance? You know, should Joe Goosen have stopped the fight when Gail Carruthers was getting beat up by Castillo? A lot of people would have said he did the right thing, but he didn't, and look at what happened. We've seen many fights with low standing. So I think he deserved the chance. He had a few moments where he landed some good punches, so why not give him that chance?
That's a key point you made, was that the fourth round is when the injury happened. So people talking about those last three, who knows when the damage that we're dealing with now actually occurred. We know he got hurt in the fourth. But, you're absolutely right, And that's the thing that separates our sport from all other sports. We do have the 24-point bucket, You can land a good shot and end the fight even though you're winning every round. And why not let your guy go for it? And actually, there's another thing you brought up, and it's not really about your fight, but I like the point that you made. Why should Nacho Berrasaint have told him to fight any other way than he was? He was winning. So why not tell him that he was winning? I completely agree with you. I think everybody, including myself, is probably the world's greatest trainer sitting on our couch.
That's just what, like I'm telling you, that's just the way it is. You keep winning, everybody's happy. You lose one, and now everybody knows more than you. That's just the way it is. That's something I learned in the sport already. And I was told by Romulo Quirarte, who is a great trainer also. He seen me a few weeks after the fight, and he told me, look, Robert, you did a great job in the corner. Don't worry about all the criticism. You're the future of the sport. He mentioned a lot of trends. We're all on our way out. You're the future, so stay strong and stay positive. But those are just words from somebody that knows boxing, that's been in it many times, and I was happy with what he told me. So I did my the best I could. Tony was still responding to everything we were telling him. So I think he deserves the right to continue.
And you're a young trainer. This is a very situational kind of sport, and that you can do a bunch of things in the gym and prepare and learn that way. But for you, the only way you're really going to get better and more experience is, I don't know if you would agree with this, is the fights themselves, being in different situations and learning from each one and growing, right?
That's exactly what I'm doing. I am 36. I think I've been doing a great job with all of my fighters. Nobody questions what I've been doing with Brandon. Nobody questions what I've done with Nonito, Mikey. Everybody gave me a lot of credit when Brian Veloria beat Solis, when Steven Leonard became world champion, where nobody felt he had a chance. So for one fight and get a crazy one, it's just part of boxing, and I just got to learn that that's just the way it is. There's always critics.
Robert, let me ask you about strategy wise. Obviously the first time Margarito stepped in with Cotto, the coming forward, the taking the shots and working that body and gradually just keep coming forward worked. This time, it's. I don't know if you think it's going to be any different. Should he stick to that same style? Was it something added to the style, or did you see what are you seeing what I see with Cotto? We still got the same fighter, so why change our own fighter?
Exactly. Why change it? We did make a little corrections and little adjustments to the game plan, but come on, There's no secret to Margarito's style. He's one of the fighters that keeps coming and gets stronger as the rounds go by, and that's what we got to train. We just got to train to be ready. We try to prevent more punches, move his head a little more, stay stronger, solid jab, and we are ready. I feel he's a lot stronger and a lot faster at 154 right now because the way he's been sparring and training, he showed it to me. So I think that I think we should come out with good results. I actually believe that Cotto at 154 is not as fast and not as strong as he was at 140 or 147. So things are things that we're taking in consideration and we're going to try to take advantage of.
Who I'm really fascinated with is Cotto's new trainer, Pedro Diaz. Okay, the scientific of what he brings in as a trainer. But let me ask you, as a trainer who's worked with speed guys with really talented fighters like Nonito Dornier, Mikey Garcia, your brother, to the grindy type of fighters like Brandon Rios to Antonio Margarito. When you hear a guy that talks about the scientific, bringing in the science into the fight, that's worked with a lot of Olympians, but not really has worked with the pros, what does that tell you about that trainer? What do you think about their philosophy of training fighters?
Yeah, I hope he's great. You know, I know what I've heard is he's done a great job with Cuban amateurs. You know, that's not training professional fighters to fight 12 rounds. And you know, but hey, hopefully he's done a great job, and we'll get a good fight, and hopefully Cole made the right decision when he brought him in, because you know, I don't want to hear that it was a trainer. I don't want to hear that the trainer was inexperienced. You know, I want to hear that they came in with the best and tried their best.
So you know, let me ask you this. I want to follow that up. When you heard Miguel Cotto dropped Emmanuel Stewart and picked up Pedro Diaz, what was your first thought about that? Did you think, man, he made a big mistake? He shouldn't have done that.
No, not at all. I just thought hopefully something is for his own good, and I was really looking forward to going in against Emmanuel Stewart. But hey, it didn't happen. Hopefully, this is better.
Right.
Is that a sign to you though that this is a guy that's still looking for an identity and for answers? I mean, in a lot of ways, I thought that Margarito took that from him when he beat him the first time, and he kind of began to doubt himself. And you really haven't seen the same guy since, you know.
Margarito beat him once. He already beat him. He's already done it before, so that's already an advantage there. Cotto knows he's got somebody in front of him that's not going to step back, and that's going to keep coming and coming. So he knows he already went through it for 11 rounds. He knows he's going to get the same again. He has to be ready, and he has to be prepared for all that, because that is coming to him. And I know that, you know, he was the world champion. He was undefeated. He was named one of the best pound for pound. He still had pride. And he's, you know, and for him to say that he wasn't in good shape, he trained hard. It's just, well, you got somebody on you every second of the round for 10, 11 rounds. There's the time when you're gonna say this is it, I can't take it anymore. And he went through that already, and he knows that, he lived that. I think you know, he already has it against him, and we already have that in our favor.
You know, everybody talks about the wraps and all that, and jumping back to the Pacquiao fight, there was a, and you may not even want to speak to this, but there was some controversy regarding the wraps that Pacquiao used. In that fight with you guys, that he was
no,
using
not,
some sort of like
with, nothing to do with the rap. No, not at all. That wasn't the thing. You know, it's when the roll of tape that he pulls that he puts in between his fingers to pull the rap back, and you know, to hold the rap in between the fingers. It was like rolled into a thick
like a braid.
Yeah, exactly, like a braid, and you could feel it easily over the with your hand over the gauze. I don't think that's right. I don't think that I thought that was right, but the commission said there was nothing wrong with it, so we had to fight like that. But I don't see why the commissioners will allow something like that when it was thick and it was hard and you could easily feel it over the gauze. So that was the only question that we had. But no, the rap, you know, there was nothing wrong with the rap. It was just that we were questioning. But hey, we had nothing. We couldn't say do anything about it. The refs, I mean, the commission said nothing wrong with that. Nothing was wrong with that. So we let it go.
How's the tension in your guys' camp right now, Robert? Because I know when we've seen the 24/7 with Margarito and Cotto, we could literally feel it as an audience. We could really feel it, you know, even with the press conference. But among you guys, how's that tension, and how are you able to calm him down to keep him focused and not go out there unfocused where his head is solely just to hurt the guy rather than box him to get a stoppage?
Our camp is fun. You know, everybody's is is having fun. Everybody enjoyed training camp. Margarito is not, you know, we didn't prepare him for this just yesterday and today. All months in training camp, all weeks in training camp, we've been preparing for that. You know, he's taking it like just, you know, something that he's laughing about it. You know, Cotto, you know, since they started press conferences and press training, everything, that's all he's mentioning, all the hammers. Man, come on, drop that already. You're already fighting. You already signed the contract. You already want to be in the ring with him. So don't sound like a guy whose girlfriend cheated on him and he forgives her, and then 3 years later he's still reminding her and still bitching about it. If you forgive her, you forgive her. You know, you feel that if that's what you have, the way you feel that you should, but you already signed the contract to fight again. So come on, just drop it. You know, that's the way I feel.
You know, everybody's saying,
well, we're okay. Our training camp is fine.
Everybody's calling this, you know, a redemption for Cotto if he wins. But if Margarito wins, is this his redemption of, like, saying, look, you guys keep saying that I use plaster of Paris against him, but if he knocks him out, do you feel that that's Margarito's way, or in his mind, his redemption of saying, see, I didn't cheat?
That's what he wants to do. You know, he wants to just prove that he didn't need anything to do to beat him, that he didn't use it, and win his title that he really wants at 154, because you know, that is one of his dreams, to become champion at super welterweight. So really, about, you know, this proving people wrong or this and that, or Cotto saying this, that's not even bothering him. He just wants to become world champion at super welterweight, and he knows there's many fights in the future ahead of that, so he knows what's next and what could come after that. So that's why he's training. That's why he's going to come out and do what he does best. Not because he wants to prove everybody wrong, because everybody's still going to be talking 10 years from now. They're still going to be remembering that, and that's never going to go away. The way it looks is never going to go away.
Why did you guys decide to go to Mexico? Was it strictly just to change things up, or the altitude? What was it?
It was the altitude. He had never been there, but he knows a lot of great Mexican champions have done it, and he wanted to try it. His brother-in-law has done it a couple of times with other fighters, and he told them, you know, this is a great place. It's a great place to get in shape, and you feel we're going to be really good. And he tried it, and he loved it. I was okay with it, and I took Brandon with me, and they're both in great shape.
Now, explain to me, you know, one of the things people talk about is that if you, you know, you go to high altitude, but there's like a certain period of time where if you leave the altitude, you kind of lose the benefits. Can you talk a little bit about that? Do you lose the benefits after a certain period of time? And did that trip to New York kind of interrupt that whole process?
You know what? That trip didn't interrupt. No. The only thing it interrupted was Monday of training. But what we were going to do Monday, we made it up Tuesday, and he was already in great shape. His weight is fine. It's not like he you know, he had to worry about one day of training, because he's 15 pounds overweight. Tony doesn't have that problem. But, you know, going to the altitude, you know, there's many fighters. You know, I used to go to Big Bear. So many fighters have gone to Big Bear. It's just, you know, something that that we as fighters and as trainers think is best. I don't, you know, he's got his strength and conditioning coach who knows more about, you know, he could answer that question about how much time. But if we came in a week before to Tijuana, well, actually not exactly a week, but like 5 days before to Tijuana, and now we're in New York.
Let's jump over to your other fight real quick. You've got two this night. You've got Brandon Rios also fighting John Murray. Talk to us a little bit about that fight, what that means to you guys. And, you know, I think it's going to be an action fight. If I had a criticism, though, it's just that Murray was stopped in his last fight. And I wonder, you know, what's the point of fighting a guy like that when there's other guys available? Or was there just no one else available?
Well, that's not my job. You know, that's Cameron Duncan's job. He works it up through our promoter, and we fight whoever they tell us. You know, I know that I've seen some of his videos, and, you know, he is a tough guy that comes to fight. Sometimes when you lose a fight, it's a learning experience. Maybe he made mistakes during training. Maybe he didn't train as hard, and that's why he lost. I don't know. You know, who knows? Only he knows. So we're ready for a great fighter to come and give us a good challenge. And Brandon is always in great shape, physically, mentally, always prepared to give out a great fight, and then he's ready to do the same this Saturday.
I can't wait to see him get back into the ring, man. You know, always been a huge fan of Bam Bam.
Well, you know, he's very motivated because not only for this fight, his first time in New York and fighting on a great card, but he, you know, he knows winning this fight. You know, we don't want to see anything through or past Murray, but he knows what's coming next. You know, there's already been talk about big fights for him, and he knows that he has, you know, the chance to be a great, great fighter, but he has to go through Murray.
Absolutely. Well, hopefully it's...
Is this the last one at 135, you think?
No, I don't think it'll be the last one. Maybe one or two, and then go up to 140.
Wow.
I want to see
man,
that Maidana
fight. Man,
I
don't know how you guys are keeping him at 135, man. He's a big
well,
guy.
You know, we got to be honest. He does have trouble making 135, but he does make it. He does make it, and he does get very strong the day after. You know, I know that if, you know, if Topra wants to keep him busy, right, you know, give him something quick right after this fight, if everything goes well, then you know, we'll do it again at 135. But I know that, you know, it'll be quick before, you know, by the time he gets, you know, when he gets to 140, because it has to be another one or two, but they're going to come quick. If not, we're going to 140.
Well, there you go.
Sweet.
Well, Robert, hey, brother, thank you very much, man, for taking the time to speak to us here on Leaving the Ring. Wish you the best of luck on Saturday night with both of your fighters. And just be careful, man, you know how New York can get a little rowdy, especially with that fight. So many emotions with that fight. And, you know, there's already some talk, you know, and rumors and this and that, that there might be a riot right after that fight.
Well, it's got to be between Puerto Ricans because there's not be most. I think 99% of the people there are going to be Puerto Rican. So I don't know. I haven't heard that. Everybody's been very nice. It's beautiful here in New York, and the people have been nice. I don't know. I don't see that happening.
Hopefully
no.
not,
I mean,
man.
Yeah.
It's, yeah. I think it's going to be a special night, man. It's going to be very exciting, and I can't wait to see it.
It is. That's what we can't wait for it.
Well, there you go. All right, Robert. Well, thank
okay.
you again, brother.
Okay.
You take
Thank
care.
You very much. Thank you. Thanks.
Good luck to you, man.
You know, I'm still on the fence here, Gabe, of who I'm going to pick, man. You know, I'm going to have to do what I always do. I'm going to have to save it to the end of the night before I could say who
yeah.
I'm going to pick.
Yeah. Rochambeau.
Yeah.
I'm pretty set in my pick, you know. I'm going Cotto on this one. I picked him the first time, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I picked him because I thought he had more ways to win. And
right.
That he could brawl, he could box. But now I realize he's got one way to win. And I think if he realizes that right off the bat, that he has to box. But box smart, not use too much movement. Maybe get to the body a little bit more, but be judicious in what he does. You know, and very, very economical in his attack. I think he can keep Margarito turning in the center of the ring, stay away from those ropes, just keep bringing it back out to center, like, nonstop. And I think he'll be okay. I think Margarito's taken some punishment, you know, and I don't think there's any question of that. He hasn't
well, see,
run around in a long time. I mean, not since, I guess, that Roberto Garcia comeback fight. Maybe the sixth round against Pacquiao. Other than that, he's been
right.
thoroughly beaten twice. You know,
yeah.
And, you know, about stopped, as close to stopped as you can get against Pacquiao and not being stopped, and straight up stopped against Mosley. You know, we'll see. I mean, the good thing that he's got going for him is that he did win the first time. And I really wonder if he lands a good shot on Cotto early and it feels exactly the same way as it did the first time. And I always wonder that about, I don't know if Robert ever had a rematch, but I'm curious, you know, to get a fighter that's been in a rematch. Do you have like a punch memory? Do you remember what it feels like to be hit by a specific guy?
if it feels the same way as the first time, is Cotto's idea that he was being cheated against, is that going to go away and be replaced by, oh, shit?
That's my whole take here. I think there's more mental for Cotto in this fight than anything else. You know, and the thing, too, is about that eye is the first time around when they met each other in the ring, I thought Cotto went headhunting a little bit too much. And I thought exactly what you're thinking, he needs to work that body a little bit. But hearing about the eye, I'm wondering if that game plan has been changed a little. You know, where Cotto is now being told, go for that eye. Concentrate on that eye. Where it could probably lead him back into the same old night of what happened the first time where he wasn't doing enough to do enough damage to slow down Antonio Margarito. My whole thing is this, too, with this whole fight here. And I want this to be a great fight. So I don't want to screw it up for everybody and be a downer. You know, I don't want to be the party crasher, but I honestly just do not see Madison Square Garden, the judges, the commissioners, the doctors, and everybody else that's in this little circle of that special night allowing this fight to continue if that eye gets tagged too many times. If there was a slight cut on it, I just see Margarito and Team Margarito are really up against not just Miguel Cotto, but everybody else behind him and everybody else in support and everybody else that may have concern of lawsuit involved, you know, because they don't want something like that. The New York Commission do not want a fighter being damaged in their hands. I just don't see that. I might be wrong, but I think that's what Antonio Margarito and his training camp are really up against. Not just the fight alone. I think they're really up against everything else that's around it, you know, from judges to ref to doctor.
Yeah, it's Steve actually made a really good point about that in line with what you're saying, in that everybody's talking about Steve Smoker being the ref and letting it go and turn into a war and all that. But really the person you got to be most concerned with is the ringside doctor. In this.
Exactly.
That person is going to be right there and looking to pull it.
And you know that doctor's been pulled aside. You know the doctor's been pulled aside by the commissioners, telling them, look, this is the situation, and this is what we got. You know, this whole farce of we're going to have to go and litigate it and talk about it, whether or not we're going to license him in New York. I knew I knew for a fact. And the guys from Top Rank, take some acting classes, please. The whole want to cry after the announcement of them going to...
I bought that.
I thought it was terrible, man. You know?
You didn't buy it?
I didn't buy it.
I did. I'm pretty experienced in the acting world. I bought it as real, damn.
I did not buy it one bit, man. It was
I've seen the Demi Moore ghost, like, single tear kind of go down his cheek. That would have been nice. That would have made it a little more real. But Carlson, I bought Todd's reaction, which was the first
Todd's
reaction.
Was a little bit better. His was a little bit better.
It was understated. You know, it was more film-worthy. You know, he just let out his breath. You could do like a single shot, you know, close-up of that one, where he just let out his breath, you know, not guilty. Whew. You know, and then Carl Moretti was like the guy who was like the friend in the background, you know, hoping that it all worked out and turning around in the chair.
It was almost like Carl was the guilty guy, you know what I mean? Where he was about to cry. He looked like he was going to cry. And I was just like, come on, dude. Don't tell me you didn't know that they were not going to give him the license. They're going to give him the license.
Yeah, OJ seemed less, you know, he let out less air, you know, when he was not guilty. But I think we all knew. There was just no way. That was one of the funnier things I've ever seen, though. The whole press conference was pure comedy. Watching that stream and the guys going, you know, can they hear us? Oh shit, we better turn off the sound, you know. And everybody just waiting, watching. You know, these things are so boring. It's like watching C-SPAN, you know.
Right.
Watching these guys talk, and I mean, the actual hearing itself was kind of interesting, but. It was like a game of pass the buck. Like, you guys didn't get us the paperwork on time. Yes, we did. No, you didn't. You know, it was just silliness. We all knew that it was going to happen. There was too much money involved. There was too much lawsuits at stake. And it happened, and I'm glad it did, because, you know, from all accounts, I'm jealous. You know, I'm watching everybody on Twitter talk about how great it is in New York and how fun this is going to be. And granted, I'm going to be at a couple very good fights myself on Saturday night in Anaheim. We'll get to those later. But, you know, I've never been to New York, and I've never been to the Garden. Oh, here we got Andre Berto calling in. Just one second.
Go right ahead. And fight fans, I apologize for not patching in certain folks that want to get on and talk about the Antonio Margarito and Miguel Cotto. Just stay on hold. We got Andre Berto coming on next. As soon as we get him off, we'll get you guys patched in so we can talk about that fight. If you want to call in, 347-215-75 here on Leaving the Ring to speak to myself, Dave Duenas, or my co-host, Gabriel Montoya. So we're back with Andre Berto, right?
Yes, I guess he's no longer the IBF welterweight champion, but former WBC champion and two-time welterweight champion, Andre Berto. Welcome to the show, Andre.
I appreciate you for having me, my man. What's going on?
Oh,
hey,
not
Joe,
much.
How you been, man? It's been a while since we've spoken to you.
It's been a while. It's been a while. I've been just running around a little bit and just enjoying time with the family and things like that.
That's good,
yeah,
brother. It's always good to do that, you know?
Oh, yeah, you gotta refresh. I got a chance to see you out at the World Series of Boxing. I don't think I've been to a show that you haven't been at. You're a pretty big supporter of that.
Was that now?
I saw you at the World Series of Boxing, and it seems like
you're
at most of those shows. Give me your thoughts on...
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a great show, and I just...
I think we lost Gabriel and Berto. I wasn't sure. I thought maybe it was my earphones or something, but it looks like we did lose them. So hopefully Gabriel will call back in with Andre Berto so we can have him and we could speak to him. Probably some bad reception. Gabe's using his cell phone for us to conduct this interview here. But anyways, while we wait for him, go ahead and if you want, call in 347-215-7598. Certainly can here on Leaving the Ring. Okay, and Dave got it clear. He's telling me right now he's trying to get back in. Gabriel, call back in, and he should be able to get back on the line with us here on the show while everybody's still waiting. So we apologize again. Don't know what happened here for with Gabe. Let me tell him right now. Go ahead, call in, buddy. Here we are. Here we go. We got Gabriel back here. Wait. Nope, we don't. Where is he at? There he is. We got Gabriel back on. Gabe, what's up, brother? You there?
Nope.
Gabe, you there?
And
Gabe,
we're
you
back.
There? Yeah, and we're back. Go ahead.
All right. So as we were saying, Andre, you've been at the World Series of Boxing quite a bit. I'm just curious your thoughts on that as a professional fighter and a guy that didn't have a chance to do something like that. What do you think of it?
I believe, you know, for us, if we would, you know, like if we would have had something like that, you know, that probably would have been something real tremendous for us, you know, just coming up and just to get a little taste of the pros. You know, I think it's, you know, definitely, I think it's something great. And at the same time, I think it would be good for, like, the promoters as well, you know, because a lot of these promoters and managers, you know, they see a lot of, you know, amateur kids, and we're amateur, and you know, they put a lot of, you know, expectations, you know, of us, you know, being great pros, and sometimes that doesn't happen that way. So it's good they can see a little glimpse of what that prospect would look like, you know, when it's time to turn pro. So I think it's better on both ends. I think it's a, you know, good situation for both ends, the management promotion side as well as the fighters.
Yeah,
it's a development process.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a nice development process where we get to know who these guys are a little bit, and even a guy like Rashid, you know, Warren, who's incredibly talented guy, but he's a bantamweight, and he may not get the kind of run that, you know, as a pro that he normally would get. It's a nice avenue for him, you know?
Yeah, definitely, man. So, you know, I think it's a good program.
I'm going to pass it on over to Dave Duenas.
Hey, you know, Berto, first off, that first fight with Victor Ortiz, man, was phenomenal. It was a great fight, back and forth. You know, any of the questions that anybody had about you, I don't know if it was answered, because you've always been an exciting fighter. You know, you've always been a guy that's willing to trade and stand there and do what you've got to do. But there's rumors now that there's going to be the rematch. Is that rumor true? Is it set to be at the in New York City?
No, I mean, you know, it's something that we've been working towards, and it looks like, you know, that fight is going to get done here soon. You know, I won the title my last fight, and you know, that's a fight that I've always wanted again. So, you know, so I got a chance to realistically, you know, instead of facing my mandatory, you know, giving up my title, you know, that's why I can move forward. I'm trying to get this rematch done, you know, not just for myself, but for the fans of boxing, just because it was such a, you know, extremely exciting fight, and I know that they want to see it again, and you know, that's the reason why I got into the fight game, man, just to, I mean, you know, from seeing exciting fights like that, and just to being the fact, you know, of being in one that was definitely the fight of the year. I mean, that's the type of situations that I get up for, that's the type of situations, you know, I get excited about. So, you know, so I'm eager to try to get this thing done, and it looks like it's going to be done here soon.
And my mistake, I said New York, it's supposed to be at the MGM where they're talking about taking it too. You know, tell me a little bit, what happened, in your opinion, in that fight? Did you fight the wrong game plan? Did you underestimate Victor Ortiz? What happened for yourself?
You know, I just had realistically, I just had a bad night, man. I mean, and I feel that, you know, not worked for the fight, you know, but then again, you know, at that time, you know, I'm not going to lie, it wasn't a fight that I was realistically, I really got up too much for, you know, but for every fight I work hard for, you know, I just had a bad night at the end of the day, man. You know, I just, you know, just anybody who ever seen the fight, it was an exciting fight, but they didn't see the same, you know, Andre Berto, you know, I went through some situations, but, you know, a few days before the fight, but you know, we got in there, we put on a great performance, so, you know, sorry, just go around, you know, we go ahead and get this thing done, you know, this right here was just something I believe, you know, that right there just had to happen, just so it can really spark that flame up under me, you know, again, and now, you know, I'm at a focus point that I haven't been in, you know, probably since I turned pro, so, you know, so I'm excited about it, and I'm looking forward to it.
You guys made a major change in adding Victor Conte right before your last fight against Jan Zavik. Can you talk a little bit about what Victor brought to the table? I know that he discovered you were kind of low in iron and possibly.
I mean, you know, so I found out about that situation after the Ortiz fight, you know, because I didn't feel. Well, I didn't feel the same at all. You know, actually, like, going into the fight, you know, I mean, like, during the fight and going into the fight, I felt like something was wrong. You know, but I wasn't really sure at all until after the fight. You know, I really, you know, wanted to get it checked out, you know, because, you know, after the fight, you know, we have to go to the hospital and get checked out, you know, but at the fact of, you know, finally getting these blood tests and the doctors, you know, telling us that, you know, they didn't know how to really perform that night because I was extremely dehydrated and I'm extremely anemic as well. And, you know, I wasn't really sure on what that meant too much. And then we did our research on it. And, of course, you know, that was the case. But, you know, so I just had to look out for my nutrition. And I knew that that Victor Conte was probably going to be one of the best, you know, in the world to try to help me out with that. You know, because, you know, just us just growing up, you know, like the only thing that, you know, that we knew was hard work. You know, my father just bred us just to work hard. We didn't know too much about, like, the vitamins, the protein shakes, and all that other good stuff. We just knew just to try to work as hard as possible. And at the end of the day, we're we're going to be able to beat our opponent just because of our will of working hard. And I feel that it's probably, you know, finally, you know, kind of just caught up with me. And I really just had to look at it on all different perspectives, had to work hard, but make sure to rest and make sure to put the right things back on my body. So, you know, like I said, everything happens for a reason, man, and we got back to the drawing board. I was just trying to get it right.
Victor's history didn't I know Victor pretty well, you know, and I trust that he's working clean at this point, but his background didn't give you any pause at all?
No, not really, because, you know, because I felt, you know, after I did all my research, you know, on Victor, you know, I know everybody that got caught up in the situation with him years back knew exactly what they were doing. And you know, like I know Victor pretty well right now at this point, that he's not the type of guy, you know, that'll lie and say this and say that. You know, he tells you exactly what you're getting yourself into. So, so if you're not looking to go that route, you don't have anything to worry about. And if you know not to stick any type of needle in your body, in your butt, you know that you're not doing anything, you know, that you shouldn't be doing. So,
right.
So I believe everybody that got caught up in that situation knew exactly what they were doing.
And speaking of needles, one of the things I'm very excited about with this rematch is you guys have been very adamant that you want to take blood tests and urine tests.
Yeah.
You do the full nine as far as testing.
Of course.
But have you decided what organization is going to be handling this testing? I know there's Whitman's group and BADA, and then there's USADA. You've got some choices here. Have you made a decision in terms of what you want to do?
Yeah, I really want to try to get the new testing done through VADA, you know, Margaret Whitman's group, you know, just because, you know, just knowing, you know, USADA's tremendous, you know, organization as well, but just being around Victor and just really getting a lot more understanding, a lot more knowledge about the testing and about, you know, performance, you know, drugs that a lot of these people are taking and how there's still ways, I believe, even through the USADA, you know, situation that they can really, you know, still kind of, you know, get away with some things, you know, especially if they're dealing with a real, you know, sharp or intelligent, you know, drug guy, you know, but, you know, with just knowing that the VADA program, yeah, I believe they're going the extra mile and just being very, very particular on every aspect of things that it's almost impossible just to get away with anything performance enhancements in your body with the VADA program. So I believe that's the, you know, I mean, that's the program I want to try to go with.
That's one of the things he brings up, and he's one of those guys that you need a dictionary in order to hang with him in a conversation.
Oh, yeah.
It's ridiculous, you know, but he talks about the 50% hematocrit rule, and
yeah,
I think that's a very important aspect of what that is. And for people that don't know what that is, If your hematocrit, which is like your red blood cell count, is at 50%, odds are you're cheating. And I don't think USADA actually tests for that. They go, oh, there's no drugs in your blood. Well, that's great, but what's the hematocrit at? And I think that's, to me, the key in their testing, that they're going to be looking at that. And I think they're doing the carbon isotope ratio testing, which is going to do the, you know, it finds out if you're using fake testosterone and all that.
Exactly. And I think, you know what I mean, like that's one of the things I really don't think the USADA is really, you know, doing to a point, but just for the fact they're going the extent mile of taking a different approach to the next level to make sure, you know, things are getting done. Because a lot of these performers have had some drugs. They're out your system within, you know, 24 hours, 48 hours. You know, but then again, you're still having that full effect of them. So we just have to try to make sure, just to try to clear everything over the board. If it's the hematocrit, if it's anything else, we'll be able to detect anything.
Brito, I want to go back a little bit on that Ortiz fight here. You know, you said something that a lot of fans right now are kind of just falling over themselves about, which was, you know, you weren't yourself that night. You had a bad night, you said. You had a bad night. Let's talk about that bad night. What more? Because I got to tell you, bad night or not, I thought you had a good night. I mean, you were doing the same usual things that we're used to you doing, throwing combinations, throwing that right hand. You even rocked Victor Ortiz. What more could you have done that it made it could have been a good night for you?
Man, I mean, just me coming out with a lot more energy, me being you know, a lot more aware, you know, coming out first off. I mean, I started slow. Yeah, I mean, you know, just because, I mean, just like I said, yeah, I didn't feel like I was up. Yeah, I was up for the fight, you know, starting off, you know. I mean, you know, it took me a while to really even get started up. When it comes to just my punching power, I don't feel that everything just, you know, just fell in place. You know, just me, just using my jab and using combinations like I know how to use them, you know what I mean, turning Victor Ortiz, just doing things that I know that I should have done just to make the fight easier. I believe I could have done. And like I said, yeah, I just wasn't myself. You know, my legs, they didn't really under me like they're supposed to be. I mean, just a few different things, you know. If they're excited about that fight, I know if I come in there 100%, you know, it would just be a dominating, you know, Andre Berto. But like I said, at the end of the day, you know, Victor Ortiz, he came in there like doing what he wanted to do, and just came in there focused and hungry, and you know, he got the win that night, you know. But at the end of the day, it was a tough win, and you know, six rounds. You know, he had to pay a few times. You know, he had to pay a few times. I believe I let him off the hook in the sixth round. But, you know,
right.
But you know, it is what it is. It's a fight game. And I know that I'm going to be ready.
There's no question that we could tell. I mean, you know, what I've read and what I'm hearing, we could definitely tell that you want this rematch. You really, really want the rematch, you know. But when you talk about what I wasn't up for the fight, my question is, then were you forced to sign to fight Victor Ortiz if you weren't up for it? I mean, why was it signed then?
No, I mean, the fight was done. I mean, a lot of people just don't realize when it comes to this fight game, you know, mm-hmm. you have to go through a process. Like, you have to go through a process. You have to go through, you know, things that you have to, you know, I mean, just do to a point. I mean, it was a fight that was brought to me, and I was basically okay. I mean, you know, at that time, you know, I was going through certain opponents, and I wanted, you know, for sure, you know, bigger fights at that time. You know, basically coming from, you know, supposedly fighting, you know, Shane Mosley and you know, talks about me with some of the other big guys, and then just, you know, them just bringing Victor Ortiz to me and just basically knowing that, okay, get past this guy, maybe something else will come hereafter. You know, after you go through something like that as a young fighter, just going through the motions and you know, like you're winning, but then again, the big fish aren't coming to you yet. It gets kind of lackadaisical, you know, somewhat to a point. And at the same time, you know, just me just going through the motions and you know, beating these guys, dominating these guys. But then again, you know, I'm still not getting the full credit from, you know, from some of the critics or some of the fans or some of the commentators just because, you know, these fights were too easy. Oh, I should have just beat this guy. Oh, I should beat this guy. And, okay, he's fighting Victor Ortiz. He should have just run through this guy. You know, so just that, you know, the anticipation and that high expectation, you know, it kind of, you know, offsets each other sometimes, you know. So, you know, so you get in the ring with high expectations, but then again, to you and to everybody else is really not a big reward. You know what I mean?
Right.
If you win or not. So, you know, so it kind of, you know, offsets you a little, I mean, well, a little bit. And then, you know, I paid for it. You know what I mean? I paid for that, I mean, at the end of the day. So, you know, it just got me back where I wanted to be. And you know, I had to go back to the, you know, drawing board. You had to come back my next fight. I wanted to fight somebody that wasn't just, you know, just anybody, but, you know, a kid from overseas who was hungry, who was strong, and and they had a world title that, you know, that's been, you know, beating guys, you know what I mean, just left and right. I wanted to come back and just jump right back in the mix, and I did that. And I was a gun shy coming in. I wasn't feeling no type of way. I went straight to him, and we worked it out. You know what I mean? So,
right.
So, I mean, that's the way I am. That's just the way I work. And just now I'm ready to just continue going forward.
I'm curious why you decided now to do the drug testing. Is it in part to show that your work with Victor is clean, or is it just part of your education process?
Everything. I believe, you know, of course, the work with me and Victor, we're doing as clean as possible. And just the fact of just my knowledge, just being with him within this last camp and learning so much about it and learning how, I mean, learning how rampant it is in the sport, and just knowing for a fact that, man, damn, you know, I was probably in the ring with, you know, with guys that were, you know, or on, you know, all types of stuff, and I just didn't know it. It's just the fact that I was just a superior athlete. But, I mean, just knowing that it was just so rampant in the sport, man, it's just ridiculous. And you want to try to get on the, you know, I mean, especially with fights like this with so much money on the line and so much, you know, everything else on the line, you want everything to be on the same playing field. So, you know, so whoever wins, I mean, you know, it's just the best fighter that night.
It's a trip, you know. I've talked to Victor for over a year now, and just my knowledge has gone through the roof because of it. And you know, I talked to a few people, and I was telling somebody today, you know, like a year ago, 2 years ago, if I heard somebody got popped for like a diuretic, I would have went, oh, well, they were cutting weight wrong, and so they used a diuretic. Now I go, gee, I wonder what they were masking. You know, it's a different way of looking at things, and I think Victor was on our show, and we asked him, like, what level of boxers does he think is juicing? And he said 90% of athletes are probably juicing. That just scared the hell out of me. And you take punches for a living, so I imagine.
That's what I'm saying. And that's the thing, just being with him and just learning so many of just our American superstars in general that we've looked up to since we were younger. And then now, I mean, even some of the superstars now, just knowing for a fact what they're doing behind scenes, it's just ridiculous. I mean, I'm just like, wow, it seems like, you know, I mean, everybody is doing this. But then again, I mean, you're in this sport, if it's basketball, football, if it's even golf, tennis, you know, cycling, these guys want to be the best in the world. These guys are willing to do whatever it takes to be able to have their body perform at the best of its ability. And plus, they feel, oh, you know, everybody else is doing it, so I might as well do it. That's the only way I'm going to be able to keep up with everything. So, I mean, you know, like, it's rampant everywhere. But when it comes to this sport, I mean, like I say, it's not cycling. It's not basketball. You know, just shooting the ball. It's not tennis, just hitting the tennis ball. It's not, you know, golf. We're boxing. We're punishing each other's bodies. Like, we're trying to knock each other's heads off. This is dangerous. Like, this is life and death type of situations. So we have to try to take the right precautions to make sure everything is on the same playing field, or somebody could be, you know, seriously injured or even die.
I'm curious, too, you know, with this last fight with Jan Zavik, which was another all-action fight, you basically went and you got a high-level tune-up for your body, you know. And I kind of looked at it, and I think I asked you about it beforehand, and I kind of saw it in the fight. It was almost like you went from, like, leaded to, you know, super unleaded. Did you know, was it kind of a figuring-out process of, like, okay, I've got all this fuel, I've got a brand-new Ferrari, but I don't know how fast it goes and how fast I should, you know, when I should step on the gas?
Yeah, exactly how it was. I mean, you know, I mean, just first coming in the first, you know, 2-3 rounds, I just came straight out. And then, you know, my coach is looking at me in the corner like, all right, man, relax, slow down. I mean, you know, so, you know, like in the, I think, 4th or 5th round where people were saying, oh, I think he's getting tired. No, it wasn't the case. I wasn't getting tired. It was just the fact that I was really just trying to tone the pace down a lot. You know, I got touched with some shots I shouldn't have got touched with, but, you know, I didn't really feel them at all. But just the fact that he wanted me just to slow it down, because I felt like I was just ready to go from the beginning of the round, you know. So, so right now, just the fact of trying to, you know, just trying to, you know, get used to everything, you know, trying to make sure to get used to, you know, these things that I'm putting in my body, just to take care of my body, you know, eating the right things and making sure, you know, I rest, you know, continue to work hard, but continue to rest and let your body heal and you know, make sure your body peaks at the right time. And when it comes to fight time, you know, mentally, physically, you're ready to go. You know, so it's just the fact that right now, just make sure to be able just to handle everything, be able to, you know, make sure things go at the right pace and that you're able to, yeah, I mean, just let things, you know, loose when you have to let it loose.
Right.
I'm not sure if Dave has more. I just have one more question. I know you got to get into the fights.
Yeah.
You've got the physical handled. Obviously, you've got your mental handled. But as a fighter,
yeah,
what do you got to do different with Ortiz? Is there a different approach? You got to lure him into a kiss and a hug? What do you got to do?
First dinner, right, Berto? First dinner. Tell him first dinner, then a kiss,
yeah,
man.
Yeah. Kisses and hugs, man. You know, we're going to see if we can make it happen so I can clip him. But with the Ortiz situation, it really won't be too much to try to change up because, I mean, just for the fact of just me just knowing I can, knowing for the fact that he's right in front of me, knowing that I can hit him whenever I really want to hit him, and knowing when I hit him, I know for a fact that I can hurt him, you know, extremely bad. So it's just the fact to just work on a few little things. You know what I mean? Work off my jab, you know, being able to turn if I have to turn him, you know, but realistically, not really trying to change my game too much because I know I have the speed and I have the power and I have the reaction time to I pretty much catch him, you know, whenever I need to because, you know, Victor Ortiz, he's pretty much an opponent that his style realistically isn't going to change as much. You know, I mean, I believe the only difference, you know, with my fight and Floyd's fight, he came straight after me. But when he fought Floyd, he was trying to move around and do some other things and, you know, this and that, this and that. That's the thing that surprised me about this fight with Floyd. But he tried to box in the first few rounds, which didn't make any type of sense to me. But, you know, but he did. But then again, even in that fight, he showed, you know, it's extremely easy to hit him. You know, he has ferocity. He comes at you, and, you know, especially if you try to go straight back with him. You know, so you just have to be on point, be sharp, you know, you have to be sharp and you just have to play your game. That's it. Just stay sharp, work off the jab, turn him, and just do whatever you got to do, you know, because he's going to be there to be hit. And even if he tries to box, you know, realistically, he's not a boxer. So he's always going to resort back to his stand there trying to brawl type mentality. So, you know, but I'm the fighter that can clip him and hurt him and put him out in the middle of any type of exchanges. So,
but let's not forget, though, Bruno, you were hurt, too. Got to remember that. You were hurt, too, in that fight. So you got to move that head, man.
Of course. You know, he hit him with a good shot the first round. I mean,
right.
The thing is, you have to go back and look at the tape. The first fight, I mean, like, first round, you know, he hit him. He threw a shot. Realistically, I just took a knee because everything was coming so fast. And then the second knockdown, of course, I was in there throwing a barrage of punches. And, you know, he hit me with a shot. It wasn't a hard shot, but, you know, my body kind of just, you know, and my body just basically just let go. And I just went down. My legs was out. And you know, he has pop. He has pop, not going to lie. He has some cracking power, you know.
Right.
But then again, like I said, it's just going to be set for an exciting fight. You know, like I said, it's going to be the luck of the draw. You know, I'm going to try to stay sharp, and he's going to try to stay sharp. We're going to see who's going to get caught. That's it.
Man, I want to see this rematch, definitely. Like I said, the first time around, you guys gave a hell of a show. Hey, our last question for you, Dre, is how much of Twitter has gotten you in trouble, man?
Twitter got me in trouble a few times, man. And, you know, I love Twitter. It's a good outlet, but it will get you in trouble. So, stay on top of it. My girl Julie, you know, my assistant Julie Goldsticker, man. She's my assistant / PR / everything else. So everything that I put out on Twitter that is inappropriate or causes a little fire, she'll be quick to call me. So.
Right.
You know, she
maybe she needs
to stay on top of me.
Maybe Oscar De La Hoya needs to hire her too, as well. You know, because Oscar, man, he's in himself a lot of trouble.
Yeah. I see that. He's been really, really reckless lately, man. But Julie's been staying on top of things, man. And plus, you know, I'm going to this training camp. I might be on Twitter, you know, for the rest of the training camp, just so I can stay focused and do what I got to do. So we're gonna see, man. We're trying to lock this thing down here soon, you know, and you know, hopefully try to bring another fight, you know, for the fans that they're gonna love, another classic. So.
Hopefully,
awesome,
brother.
Man.
Hey, man. Hey, thanks for coming on and speaking to us. It's always a pleasure, brother. It's always fun to have you on, and we only wish you the best. And, yeah, man, be careful on that Twitter, brother.
All right, true.
You have a good holiday, man. Take care.
You take care. There you go. Andre Berto talking to us about what happened on his night with Victor Ortiz and wants that rematch. Wants that rematch and wants to do the blood testing and start testing for any type of drugs, steroids, enhancements, you name it. That's what they want to go with. A lot of fight fans, man, on hold, Gabriel. They want to talk about what's cracking down on Saturday night. So let's patch in some fight fans that have been waiting on patiently to speak to us here on Leaving in the Ring.
Let's do it.
Let's go with, let's see, Rob Riggle's been on for quite some time. Rob Riggle, what's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
Hey, fellas, how's it going? I mean, awesome good questions, man. I like the questions y'all ask these guys. Now, a lot of guys don't ask the kind of questions y'all do. It's good. I just want to, you know.
I appreciate that, man. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm here in New York, and I'm checking in my hotel, man. It's crazy. I brought my Mexican flag with me, though. I don't know if I should take it out, though. You know, I'm neutral.
Hey, Rob, do it. So that I can identify you when you're flying off the balcony. I go, that's Rob Riggle. There's Rob Riggle right there.
Yeah. I'm neutral, man. You know, I'm hyped about these fights coming up, you know. And I'm neutral with the exception. The only person I'm not neutral with the matchup on Saturday is Brandon Rios, you know, because, I'm going for him versus the other guy. But everybody else, you know, I'm kind of 60-40, 50-50, you know. I'm just curious to see what happens. How do y'all think this eye's going to hold up? I mean, he's wearing his glasses a lot. He's saying, how it's healed up and everything's fine. But, you know, he always has, even when he was in that media workout where he wasn't really working out, he has that glasses on. That's what I'm worried about.
I think it's more of a, it looks weird, so he covers it up kind of a thing, you know. I think maybe it also goes with the kind of the villain thing that he's kind of riding on this fight. But I think it's more of a cosmetic, like my eye looks funny and he kind of feels odd about it. But I'm really curious. That's the million-dollar question. I mean,
yeah,
the eye is fixed for him to walk around and see, but is it battle-tested? You know, do they have those doctors come in and start punching him in the eye with a glove on?
Probably needed to hire Ann Wolf to test out that eye, put a hammer to it, you know?
Yeah.
That's the only thing I see him holding him back, because I think seeing the 24/7s and their histories, I think he's got the mental edge. I think he's willing to go more than Cotto, and Cotto's at 154 now. I don't think he's going to be as fast as he was at 147 when they fought the first time.
Yeah.
You know I think you're right.
Thing is,
yeah.
He's a small guy, Cotto, and you know, he's thick, but like a little fire plug. But 154, you got to look at both of them though, because Margarito's track record at 154 is not great.
Right.
It's not even good. And Cotto's, you know, he's dealt with movers. He hasn't dealt with a real. I guess you know, Marga, he's dealt with a puncher, and he kind of went life and death a little bit with the guy. And people may say I'm crazy, but he might be a little bit sharper of a puncher in the way he throws some of his shots than Margarito. Margarito throws
maybe
a little
wide. More awkward. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where you can't really time them, and you don't really see them because they're just kind of thrown. They're kind of thrown from really weird angles. You know?
Yeah, and I think he's got heavier. You know, like one punch power. Maybe it equates to just heavy hands at a higher weight. For Mayorga, because he hasn't really blown anybody out the way he did Vernon Forrest, and he really has gotten a lot of run off of that one win, you know, over the years. But still, it's almost
it's a kind of a toss-up matchup. You know, what does each guy have left? I think is really the question. Is Margarito's eye going to hold up? Is Cotto really a 154-pounder, or is it really good matchmaking heading into these fights? We just don't know. And that's really the thing, you know. I'm really on the fence. I'm going with Cotto just because I think he's got a little more left, but all those other questions kind of make me go, you know.
There were more questions leading up into this fight for Antonio Margarito. The eye, that not looking fantastic at 154, really not winning a whole lot of rounds except for that one round with Manny Pacquiao in the sixth round. And the commissioner and the doctor and just all of that, to me, there's just a lot of negatives going in for Antonio Margarito. Miguel Cotto, though, the only thing with Miguel is the punch at 154, is it going to be enough to hold off a bigger Antonio Margarito? We didn't really see him hurt Manny Pacquiao, who's a smaller guy. We seen him get beaten up again by a smaller guy, the way he was beaten up by a big guy in Antonio Margarito. The punch with Antonio, I think it's still there. It's still thumping because we saw the effect of what happened with Pacquiao. I don't know, man. To me, it's just one of those throw a bunch of panties up in the air and it's going to hit a few heads, you know, type of fight to me. I'm really interested in how well Pedro Diaz is going to do for Miguel Cotto just because of the scientific of what he's bringing into the corner. The changes that what Cotto was learning with Manuel Stewart, bringing back the jab, learning to move, when to move, when to stick that jab. Is that been all taken away? It's always terrible to see a fighter that has a certain style then been scratched out and then trying to reinvent them. And you know, with Oscar De La Hoya, which is a perfect example, was a guy that went trainer after trainer after trainer that eventually he never knew exactly what to do. He didn't have an entity in there at all. He just was kind of just doing what his natural talent was able to get him by with. And that might be the case with Miguel Cotto at this point of his career. He may just have to get away with this fight based on just pure talent, no game plan.
I mean, because I keep watching that fight over and over. I noticed Cotto's a guy, he likes to fight with the rhythm. Yeah, he kind of bobs in and out, you know, kind of does that little, you know, he'll hit, he'll kind of take a couple steps down to the side, you know. But Margarito, I just keep watching that fight over, and I think it was just the pressure. I don't think, you know, it's just heat.
Pressure, uppercut, body shot, Cotto walking himself back to the ropes, Cotto not being able to really adjust to pressure fighters. He's never had the ability to adjust to pressure fighters. Sometimes he allows himself to get stuck in the mud and trade with certain punches that he shouldn't trade with. You know, there's a lot of things. And when we talk about, when we talked a little earlier about Kermit Cintron body language, in a lot of ways, Miguel Cotto's face stays the same, but his body does tell the story, you know, where he starts kind of slipping out and kind of panics a little bit. I don't know if you guys agree with that, but to me, his body starts to panic, where it starts to go on overdrive and trying to get away from punches, rather than adjust to them, use the head movement and stay calm and do what you need to do to get yourself out of the round. Instead, to me, he just panics and it wastes more energy. When you panic, that wastes more energy. So I'm just curious of what Cotto's going to do when he feels the punch and the pressure's there. That nightmare, you know, it's always hard to shake that nightmare. And it's always hard not to wake up in a cold sweat. That's what I'm wondering about Miguel Cotto.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I thought the flag, dude. If I were you, I would take the flag and just fashion it into like a parachute. That way, if they throw you.
I'll be next to the security guard. I mean, the only reason I brought it, I mean, I love Puerto Rican guys. I love everybody, you know. I'm trying to be as neutral as possible. But, I mean, there ain't going to be no white Mexican flags out there. I like Rios. I mean, that's the only guy I'm really going for.
Put it around your neck. Be a Mexican superhero.
I might just do that. But hopefully it lives up to the hype, guys. I really hope it does.
Well, hopefully,
that's the thing I wonder about. Is it going to be as good as the first one? A lot of times rematches aren't. And I really think if Cotto has his way, it's not going to be the war that the first fight was, that he's going to keep it in the center of the ring. Anytime he gets to the ropes, he's just going to spin off the ropes, head back to center, reset, work behind that jab, and use fast combinations and just in and out all night long. And in that sense, it'll be kind of a boring fight. You know, it'll be a little more like the Foreman fight than it will be like the first fight between them. It was Margarito that made that first fight become what it became.
Yeah, definitely.
Amateur fighting, more pity pad, more scoring points and moving and volume, and that, you know, he has an amateur coach, you know what I mean? And that's how, I think that's how Pacquiao beat Margarito. He beat him with his feet, you know, and just like 5-6 punch combinations, you know. I think they're more like sharp accumulation punches, you know, like than I think that's just his plan. I don't think he's going to go in for the kill. I think he just wants to outbox him and go 12.
I think so, too. I think that's why Pedro was brought into this. But I don't know. That takes a lot legs. And you know what? An amateur, you have 4 rounds to kind of use up all that energy. We're talking about 12 rounds here. Hey, Rob, I'm going to put you back on hold, brother. We got to patch in some other fight fans who want to talk here on Leaving the Ring, okay? Thanks. I appreciate you calling in, brother.
Have a good night.
You too. All right, let's patch in CT. He wants to talk Cotto and Margarito. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
Hey, you guys brought up some really good points tonight, especially you two, Dave, when you talked about his eye. It's almost like you said, it's almost like you almost look for a premature stoppage because it's based on, like, you know, how they're so worried about his eye and do that
right
in Madison Square Garden. And I kind of worry about that, too. I kind of forgot all about that, why they did an examination like that. But it's definitely a good point. And Gabe brought up a good point, too, as far as, like, Cotto, mentally, how is he going to take it when he feels this guy's punch? And it's almost brought back to him again, because mentally he still has this guy in his mind. You know, he wants this revenge, and he's going to feel that pressure again. I just want to see how he's able to deal with it this time.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I'm thinking early on you're going to see maybe the spitting image of what happened the first time around. You know, Cotto being successful with them shots in and out, using the ring, but my question is that eye. You know,
right
after that third round, you're going to see something. I mean, actually, even after that first round, you know, I mean, is it going to be easier to cut? Is it going to be easier to swell up? You know, how is the tissue around the eye?
Right.
And that ring doctor is going to be really, really honestly, it's going to be a focus. Not only a focus, if we know HBO commentators like we do know them,
mm-hmm,
that's going to be their main focus of conversation. And I don't know where the doctor's going to be seated at, but if the doctor's hearing repeatedly, look at that eye. Oh, my God, the eye. Cotto's working that eye. Cotto's really landing a lot of shots, even though nothing was landed. But Cotto's landing it. You know what I mean? And the air is landing the eye of Cotto. I mean, of Margarito. That
right
influences the ring doctor. That influences judges. That influences a crowd. That influences the audience outside watching the fight. That's what I'm kind of just like, man, we may be really honestly setting ourselves up. But the good part is that we got some great fights on the undercard, you know. But setting ourselves up with this big fight here where it may be taken away from us by a premature stoppage.
Yeah, I also think Cotto needs to go to the body this time. I haven't seen Margarito been hurt to the body. I think Claudio went to his body pretty good in that fight. Pacquiao hit him with some good body shots. Mosey went to his body pretty good, and I think Cotto needs to go to his body, switch it up a little bit, and definitely jab on that eye, throw a left hook, you know. But the thing is, Margarito's good at, you know, hunting people down, going to the body as well, and throwing those nice uppercuts. So, I mean, it's going to be a tough fight. It's kind of hard for me to – I don't know what I'm going to go with in this fight, because it can go either way, honestly.
Yeah, definitely. Well, if it goes past 4, I tell you what, if it goes past 4, I think we got a fight. I think we got – Maybe we're just, you know, looking too far deep into it about this whole stoppage and premature in the eye and stuff. That's what I'm going to wait for. I'm not going to start standing up and getting excited or even start drinking the beer until after that 4th round, man. Hey, CT, thanks again, brother, for calling in. I'm going to put you back on hold, okay?
All right, thank you.
You know, another great fight, man, happening that Saturday night. Before we even talk about the Antonio Margarito and Miguel Cotto undercard, and we're going to patch in some other fans, too, that want to talk about that fight here. Just stay on hold real quick. But I want to talk Adner Morris and Joseph Obeko. Here we go again, man. Two very competitive guys. Two guys, I think, still think that they're still almost in the same category of saying they're both in their prime, where Adnan Morris really has found himself, I believe, as a fighter, where Joseph Arbeco was holding on to who he believes he is as a fighter. Gabriel, I don't know what your whole take about this fight here, but to me, this could be one of those nights that could outdo the first match, where the controversy really kind of just fogged up what really happened on their first time they danced around. But that first fight was really good. I mean, that first fight was a good fight. It was back and forth. You know, Morris was having his success in the early rounds, but as soon as he gassed out, that's when Joseph Arbeco, for some reason, just woke up and realized the fight is slipping away and picked it up. You know, he picked it up to a point where he even hurt Morris in the later rounds, and he started landing that right hand that we've all talked about that he possesses.
Yeah, I remember that was like the fifth or sixth round. I was like, dude, I don't care who wins. I want to see this again. It was just it was one of those times where you just see the styles match up and you go, you know what, these guys are made for each other. They're always going to be in a tough, close fight. It's always going to be like this. Let's do it again. And sure enough, you know, we ended up with a fight that had controversy. But even regardless, if you take out all the controversy, I think it's still a fight that you would want to see one more time. Arbeco lost his belt. It was a close fight. Why not do it again? And you know, I was reading, I forget who brought it up, but it was an interesting point that Arbeco kind of figured out Morris a little bit in the back end of that fight.
Yeah, he did.
And Morris didn't seem to really adjust out of that. He got hurt a little bit. He got rocked. He was getting kind of tired towards the end of the fight. And, you know, in talking to him probably like a month ago, he had said, you know, I did kind of expend too much energy in the front end of the fight. I was a little excited, and it was easy to get to Arbeco, and so I let go a little bit too much. So I wonder if that adjustment will be made by Morris and that he won't come out as fast. But also, I wonder if Arbeco is looking at the back end of that fight and going, okay, what exactly did I figure out? How can I start from that point and move forward, as opposed to the way I began, which was letting Morris dictate the pace and come forward and kind of roll downhill on me? It's going to be like most fights, particularly most rematches, it's going to be about adjustments. And who makes the first adjustment from that last fight, who made the better adjustment, and then who goes, okay, this guy changed, let me figure something else out, and then we'll just go from there, all the fight. It's a lot of people are picking Morris just outright. I'm actually picking Morris this time out, even though my original pick before they postponed the first fight was Arbeco. I just think that he's getting better as a fighter, and I think that he will learn, and he's young enough to kind of capitalize on that,
right,
and move forward successfully. But this is a even more of a 50-50 fight, I think, than the fight in New York. It's two guys that, you know, Arbeco doesn't have a lot of miles on him. He's the older guy, but there's nothing about him that has said, oh, you know what, he's getting kind of old. You know, in fact, he was the older guy and coming on strong at the back end of the fight against the younger guy. So anything can really happen in this fight. You know, I'm going with Morris, but it's one of those tough kind of gut picks that I think he's got a few more tools in his bag, but we did find out that the power of Arbeco can eventually get through and do some damage, where I don't know if Morris, I mean, he stunned Arbeco a little bit, but I think it was more the speed that set up the power. And with Arbeco, I think it was just flat out the power.
So well, you know, with me was that first time around when Morris fought Arbeco was when he stunned him, it was Arbeco going back, you know, he was trying to get away from the punch. And Morris, he was able to catch him with the tail end of that punch. But let me tell you this. Today I was, what I was doing today, I was going through all my DVDs and my VHS. Yes, I got VHS tapes and stuff. I got a shitload of them full of fights. And one fight that I found, and I started watching and I go, wow, you know what? This really, honestly, if you look at the whole scenario, Morris and Arbeco are kind of in the same situation where these two fighters were in the 80s. Salvador Sanchez, when he fought Azuma Nelson, you know, two guys, you know, Salvador Sanchez obviously was a champion, you know, young guy. Nelson was a guy that kind of came up. He was a prospect. Nobody knew a whole lot about him. And he came in a rush. Not the first time around when Morris and Arbeco faced each other. each other. But this second time around, I could kind of see the similarities of what's going to happen in this second fight, where, you know, like Azuba Nelson is a tough warrior. Same thing with Arbeko. He shows he's from the same same country and all that, where he shows he's a tough guy. He's a grit guy. He's the kind of guy that you're going to have to beat him up in order for him to lose. He's not going to just let it go. He's not going to give it to you. He's not going to hand it. But with that Azuma announcer, what I saw, Azuma was going after Salvador Sanchez. Marth wouldn't have to look at that's that particular fight. And before people start going, what, are you comparing Salvador Sanchez to Adnan Marth? No. Marth is nowhere close to Salvador Sanchez. That's my idol. But what I'm talking about, where Marth would have to really be patient. In the first fight, he led the fight. He took the fight to Arbeko. I say don't do that, because Arbeko is the guy that's coming in who needs to prove something. In his heart, he thinks he needs to prove something, and he did mention to us on leaving the ring how he waited too long. You know, it took a while for him to get going. This time around, Gabriel, I really see Arbeko go after Morris in this fight, and I think that the power Amaris is what's going to really be the overcome in this fight, because we know the skill level that Arbeko has, but with the adjustments that we've seen him do in the past in rematches, we've never really seen him be this animated where he wanted this rematch. He really wanted to take this, you know, where he wanted to prove, you know, it was an off night for him. I think he makes the mistake of going after Amaris and gets caught late in the rounds and gets dropped and gets stopped. That's my prediction. I think Modest is going to take this one. If Modest watches that Salvador Sanchez and Azuma Nelson, Zuma was all over him. Salvador Sanchez stayed composed, relaxed, slipped the punches, but stayed in the pocket, and just waited for that moment to land those big, heavy shots. Modest should not take away those body shots that he was throwing. I know that's going to be lingering in his head because of what happened the first time around, but I say just throw the body shots. Let the ref do his job, because the KO will come, because I think Joseph is going to just come to him and try to make a war out of it.
Yeah, it's very possible. You know, that's an interesting scenario. You know, and I kind of wonder if Joseph is going to try to slow the pace down and if that's going to hurt him a little bit. But, you know, he's not, I wouldn't call him an up-tempo fighter. He's kind of a mid-tempo guy. But kind of gets into his own rhythm. He's very awkward once he does. You know, we saw that in the Yanni Perez fight.
Yeah.
Where he really kind of, in the rematch, where he really kind of figured him out and just kind of got into his rhythm and really took him apart.
He's a great counterpuncher. I mean, that's his rhythm right there, the counterpunch, step back. But that counterpunching with Morris that first time around did not work. You know, Morris did not fall for those traps. You know, he was in and out. He was darting in, darting out at the right moments. And I think that's what threw
Arbeko. I think, you know,
right.
That's probably the difference. But I think that's also a factor here. This is Morris's first rematch, and Arbeko's been here before. He's shown us that he can learn from his mistakes, learn from the first fight, and come back out and win decisively. Now, granted, Abner Morris fights nothing like Yanni Perez, and I think Yanni was on top of the hill the first time, and then he kind of started to roll down the hill in their rematch. And certainly was completely down the bottom of the hill when he got around to Darchinian. So, you know, the comparison may not even work. But to me, a guy that one guy has shown he can adjust very well, the other guy, we're going to find out. I mean, there's still a lot of questions about Abner Morris that we're going to find out the answers to on Saturday night. But still, it's both of these fights, you know, even the other fight, Anselmo Moreno versus Victor Arcinian. It's another really solid matchup that I'm excited to see. I think Anselmo is going to outbox Victor Arcinian. He's going to take it to him. And people are going to be very surprised, but there's going to be one Mexican in the crowd that's not going to be surprised. That's going to be me. I think Vic is at that point, man. He's starting to slow down. He's not quite the guy
that
he used
punch,
to be.
Though. You know, that's the only thing. That punch, he still does carry very well.
Yeah.
We have to wait and see, you know, what happens and stuff. Let's patch in another fight fan before we patch in, call in Benny Ricardo, so we can hear his take of what he thinks is going to happen on Saturday night with all the fights that are coming about. So let's get Junior, who wants to talk Cotto and Antonio Margarito. You're on live right now, brother, on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
Hey, how you guys doing tonight?
Doing good, brother. Hey, can you turn your radio down in the background? It's echoing.
It's my phone. This stupid Android. It messes up sometimes. Is it still having a problem?
No. Yeah, actually, it's doing good, brother. So what's on your mind, man? What you want to talk about?
I agree with what Gabriel was saying, that Cotto's not going to fight the same fight, And
right.
And I think when he feels Margarito, even though if the gloves were loaded or not, I mean, at that point, it wouldn't matter because he's not looking, in the first fight, he was kind of trying to get Margarito out of there. He was doing lots of headshots and he was throwing some bombs and Margarito was just walking through him. And I think this time around, he's just going to box for points. He's going to, not risk it. He's going to take a shot, whatever shots he can take and move out the way and, get out of all the counters that Margarito might throw that night. And, this fight's really pumping me up, man. I'm getting really excited and I haven't felt that way since maybe when Cotto fought Pacquiao and it's driving me crazy. I know my heart's going to be racing once they get to the ring walk and they do the introductions and everything. And, oh man, I'm just getting really antsy. But I also agree also with that if the fight might not turn out the way that people think because Cotto's going to be very, very defensive this time around. I don't know. What's your guys' take on it?
I agree with you about the whole fight plan. I think that's why they brought Pedro Diaz into the fight camp, to basically get his legs back, I think, to really get those legs to work a little bit more, to have a little bit more balance, a little bit more dance to him, to get away from those punches. I mean, if you look at some of the things that Diaz has worked with him, it's really having him turn. I know they weren't able to show a whole lot on the 24/7 and stuff, but I was able to read a little bit up on him. We actually have a great article that Joanna Gonzalez did for us for Undisputed, and he really breaks down the scientific of what he kind of brings to the table with Miguel Cotto. So I really believe that he's not looking to change any of the punching combos or strength of Cotto, but he's really looking to add a little bit more to the legs and really add more or less of trying to get him to slip and get away from punches. So I could more or less see that. But like I said, with that whole eye, did it change the game plan? Did it change their mind frame of going, well, wait a minute, there's an eye there. We can get a stoppage. Why outbox this guy when we could go for the kill?
I think that there could be a huge possibility that there'll be a stoppage to the eye. Because you guys are right. The commission, they're not gonna take a risk,
Think
maybe it was gonna be later, like eight, round eight or something. Like that I mean, they might stop it then. Because I think the commission, I believe they stop fights themselves while even the doctor being there.
New Jersey, I believe, did that. That was what Larry Hazard would get up on the ring post, and I think he did that in a couple fights. Get up on the ring post and be like, all right, that's enough. And kind of override. I'm curious to see if they'll do it in New York. It's another one of those things too, where it's like almost reminds me of Marquez Vasquez 4, where you had a guy that had a bad eye, and they pretty much taped him together, got him in there. Getting him to the starting line was really the victory, and then the fight itself just kind of ended fast. And I wonder if they'll do that to us here. Luckily for us, the undercard is spectacular. It's,
right.
It's going to be a lot of action, a lot of fun. But, I do wonder about that. If things get nasty early, is it going to be, kind of anticlimactic? So in a sense, like I said, as much as I had an option to actually go out to New York and see this fight, and part of me regrets it because I don't think the atmosphere, you're going to be able to duplicate it. A ton of Puerto Ricans supporting a Puerto Rican superstar against a Mexican fighter who's his, blood rival in the Garden is just, you can't duplicate that. But on the other hand, I almost feel like I'm going to be at the more competitive fights in terms of the main event. I think it's going to be a very close fight and very hotly contested and even. Whereas in this fight, I think there's a real danger in, one, it being boring, and two, it being over very fast. Like four rounds.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm kind of saving my Garden fight for like, the dream, you know, like two prime guys that have never fought before, you know, like Mayweather, you know, like Martinez or something at the Garden. I would be there. You know, to me, that would be hot. You know, this one, I'm not so sure. You know, I was had a little bit of trepidation, just wondering.
This is the 50th date. That's what this is.
Yeah.
This is his 50th date. Junior, hey, thanks for calling in, brother. I'm going to put you on hold. We got to patch in our next guest, okay?
All right.
It's patch in Benny Ricardo. Let's hear what he's got to say. You know, he's a commentator who does fantastic. You know what? Red gave me the wrong number.
Wow.
I believe.
You're fired.
Red, say it. Done. He should be able to give
that
now. Oh, I know what it is. He gave me one digit wrong. I'll put it in right now. All right, hold on. Let's see if we can patch him in really quick. And speak to Benny Ricardo. If you want to call in to Leave It a Ring, you sure can. 347-215-7598. Just stay on hold for a short minute while we get Benny Ricardo's predictions and what he thinks about these upcoming fights here this Saturday.
Hello.
Yeah, can I please speak to Benny?
Yeah, this is Benny.
Hey, Benny, how you doing? This is Dave Duenas and my co-host Gabriel Montoya with Leave It in the Ring.
Okay, so it'll be David and who?
And Gabriel.
Hey, Gabriel Montoya, okay.
Yes, sir. How you doing, man?
I'm doing awesome.
Hey, you did a great job. I got to first tell you, man, did a fantastic job with the Marquez and Pacquiao fight, far better than what HBO did. So just first want to tell you that.
Thank you so much. That's very nice of you. Well, Benny, but I cheated because I had Amir Khan, and Amir Khan, you know, was working out with Manny, and I knew exactly what, you know, Manny was trying to do and all stuff. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, I kind of had an unfair advantage when it came to that.
Yeah, but you had more of an unbiased eye, you know, and that's what made it a lot more entertaining to hear, you know, rather than HBO.
See, that's why I can't work for Showtime or HBO. I can't be, what do you call it? You know how those guys are all scripted? I'm unscripted.
Exactly. Kind of like us here, me and Gabriel, you know, we get in trouble for being unscripted, but it works for us just like it works for you.
Totally. I mean, that's the way it's got to be.
Right.
Because, you know, as soon as you start getting scripted, then, you know, you lose the entertainment value of the whole thing, you know?
Absolutely.
Why do you need me? I mean, you might as well just get, you know, my buddy Al and those guys. They'll see Farland and let them do it.
We know what? We got some great fights happening this Saturday. Miguel Cotto versus Antonio Margarito. We got Adner Maris and Joseph Abeco, both rematches. Also with that, on the undercard in Madison Square Garden, you got Paul Wallach versus Devin Rodriguez. But I want to go first with your take with Margarito and Cotto. Me and Gabriel here have been talking with the fans and ourselves. We had Robert Garcia on a little earlier. And the focus even with 24/7, has been the eye. How much do you think the eye is going to be a big partake of what's going to happen Saturday night when they both step into the ring?
Well, you know, I mean, Antonio Margarito is a hell of a warrior. I mean, you know, I go back to, I remember going to Peter Brody was one of the great boxing promoters over at the Reseda Country Club. And I remember seeing Antonio Margarito fight his very first main event. And over there, you know, so I followed him for a long, long time. He's a, you know, tough as nails guy. But, you know, that's a heck of an injury. You know, you're talking about the orbital socket, you know, that was literally broken and, you know, repaired and all that stuff.
Right.
So, you know, that's a heck of a thing. So it's one of those mind over matters. And let me tell you something. Boxers never cease to amaze me, you know, what these guys can withstand, you know, in terms of punishment and all that stuff. I really don't think that's going to be a factor, you know, the eye. So, well, let's erase that out of the way. But then you go back into the other part where you break down now in this fight. You know, Capetillo, whether he, you know, he used, you know, because we've got to go to the Bandage thing, because that has
right.
to be a, you know, a point of conversation on that. Obviously, you know, the psyche of Antonio Margarito was really shot when he fought Sugar Shane Mosley. That was very evident. And I think that, I thought when he fought Pacquiao, you know, that wasn't the right fight for Antonio Margarito either, because, I mean, he had to be, that was his first fight back in front of, you know, a worldwide audience and stuff like that. And he had to be lily clean. You know, he couldn't do anything you know, out of the ordinary, you know, that he would have done otherwise, you know, in terms of a brawl.
Right.
Because, you know, the scrutiny was there. So he didn't fight his fight.
You're absolutely right, because he couldn't even drink Ovaltine, you know, without them accusing, saying they was throwing something in the water, you know?
Exactly. So he had to fight Lily clean. And the other part is, you know, Freddie Roach and Alex Ruiz are very smart about the catch weight. And I saw Anthony Margarito before the Pacquiao fight at 154, and he looked phenomenal. His body looked phenomenal. I thought, where is he going to get the other 4 pounds? And I think that really depletes the fighters. You know, it did. They happened to De La Hoya at 145 from 147, you know, 2 pounds. You'd be surprised what it does. So I think that catch weight, you know, really hurt. In this particular fight, that's not a factor. But psychologically, you know, if he was bandaged up and if that was a deciding thing, you know, that's what we're going to go ahead and find out here once and for all. And I think it's going to be a great fight. You know, I think it's going to be a great fight. And I think that, you know, Cotto, what he's got to do is, you know, he got to see if he can still box, you know, and then still be quick and, you know, don't try to be the hero. Don't try to, you know, go in and try to trade with him up close, but just, you know, use your boxing skills. If he can fight him the way he fought Sugar Shane Mosley and outbox, you know, Shane Mosley, then, you know, Cotto can win that. But if Antonio can make that thing into a brawl, and then that becomes Margarito's fight.
You know, we were talking about premature stoppage here on Leaving the Ring. We were talking about, you know, the doctor maybe really focused on that eye. And and if that eye is being tagged a little bit over too much, which we've seen, you know, Antonio Margarito use that head kind of like a double end bag, that we may be stolen a great fight between these two guys, a grudge match that really underlines what a grudge match is supposed to be. What are your thoughts about that?
You know, David, you make a great point, and I think that's right on. I mean, to me, some of these fights, you know, where they've had the trilogy and, you know, the fourth fight and all that stuff, I'm not always, you know, in favor of those kind of things. Because I think I go back to that Diego
Corrales?
Yeah, Corrales against Jose Luis Castillo.
Right.
And I'll never forget Joe Goosen. I talked to Joe Goosen after that, and I think, what do you think about a rematch? He said, Benny, why? They're just going to kill each other.
Right.
You know, because you get two so evenly matched fighters, you know, that it's just matched up, and, you know what's going to happen, you know? And then, you know, so that's kind of the scenario there. But I think in this particular thing, I like it because of the fact that there's some questions that got to be answered. You know, did Capetillo, you know, bandage Margarito's hand? And if, in fact, that it was true, which I've questioned, you know, Capetillo when I did the Giovanni Segura against Calderon fight back in Puerto Rico.
Right.
You know, I told him, look me in the eye and tell me, you know, what was the scenario there? And, I was convinced that, you know, that was a mistake that he made, and let's hope so. But I think if it wasn't, then I think Margarito should be banned for boxing, you know, forever. Because, you know, you're talking about the potential to kill somebody, you know, if in fact, you know, he ended up doing that. So having said that, there's a lot of answers that's got to be answered here that people are looking for in the Cotto. Because Cotto was winning that fight to the 11th. And, I mean, it was drastic the way all of a sudden, you know, he was stopped. So I think, you know, that has to be answered. As far as early stoppage, you know, I think that Margarito fight against Pacquiao, you know, Lawrence Cotto, the referee, which I'm not a big fan of him as a referee. You know,
nobody
this is a guy
is.
That, you know, his family owns the insurance company that insures the fights and all that stuff, you know, in Texas. I think that should have been stopped a long time ago. I mean, that should have been stopped 8th, 9th round, you know, because, I mean, Margarito wasn't going to win that fight.
Right.
He just took an unnecessary beating, and you saw Manny kind of looking around asking this guy, you know what? When you got to stop, because, I mean, he couldn't see anything. I mean, Margarito said he was fighting Manny, Moe, and Jack in that fight.
That's hilarious. Benny, this is Gabriel.
Gabriel, tell me to stay with me, because the French line's come now. You never know when they're going to come here.
No, we know that, Benny.
David, stay with me here, buddy. Gabriel's right on, man. Me and Gabriel are bonding here.
I'm curious, just in terms of broadcasting, you brought up that you're unscripted, and a lot of fans get upset because they feel like HBO kind of has their favorite, their house guy,
and they kind of cheerlead them. Showtime has always seemed to me very even keel. But because you guys do more of the international feeds or the independent feed, is there that kind of pressure, or is it just left to you guys to do your research and simply call the fight? Do you have a producer in your ear? Can you tell us about the process a little bit?
No, I'm totally free. In fact, you know, I've got such a great, you know, relationship with Primetime, you know, in the UK, which I do the fights for internationally. Those guys are awesome. Tim Markwell and David McConaughey. Those are guys that give me the total freedom. And what I do is I write a complete column. You can go to primetime.com and stuff there in England. You can see my whole preview of the fight before you. So when you see the, you know, my preview of it, you can see my due diligence. And as far as really, really, really preparing myself for a fight. And, you know, I mean, I even factor in, like, before the Mayweather fight against Victor Ortiz, one of the things that I always do is I always factor in who the referee is and who the judges are going to be. Because according to them, I even do the research on those guys. So I know what they favor. You know, what their idea of effective aggression is, what their idea of clean punching, you know, ring generalship. Those are the kind of things that I keep a book on all the judges, you know, and how they go ahead and they score a fight. Same thing with a referee. I look at, you know, what guys will, you know, permit inside fighting, you know, and I also look at the position of the referee during a fight. Where does he position himself? And I, quite frankly, you know, have always been real suspicious of, you know, Joe Cortez. I think Joe's a great guy and everything else, but, you know, as a referee, someone that, you know, starts, you know, coming up with a saying, you know, that firm, I'm fair and all that stuff. And, you know, I saw what he did in the Mayweather Hatton fight. I saw what he did in the Soto at the Owen fight. And I just think his positioning is not a very good one, you know, where he positions himself. And, again, I'm saying this about a Hall of Fame referee. But, such, again, I'm unscripted, so I could go ahead and give my opinion. And so I had a premonition before that, you know, Joe Cortez is going to play a major role in the fight. And I listed out why. And you can see the article that I wrote about it beforehand on why I thought it was going to be. So then right after the fighter introduction, then I looked at my announcer partner, which in that fight was Wayne McCullough, the pocket rocket, and I said, Wayne, assess for me Joe Cortez's performance in a big-time fight. And he said, Benny, he cost me my title in Japan. And then I went ahead and gave examples of, you know, my opinions as far as his positions in fights before. And then sure enough, we get in that fight. And again, horrible position to be able to go ahead and not take command of the two fighters, you know, allowing Ortiz to get behind him and then go over there. And, you know, he was trying to locate the judges. And I thought, wait a minute, you're the main guy in the ring.
Right.
The judges are not going to find you. You are in the center of the ring. Let them find you. You don't have to go ahead and try to find them to make eye contact.
Maybe,
I mean,
he dropped
why they find you.
I was thinking maybe he dropped his earpiece or something. That's why
he did that.
Dropped his earpiece?
Yeah, but even then, I mean, what's an earpiece? I mean, the bottom line is you are in the center of the ring.
Right.
I mean, you are at that point, I mean, an earpiece is as good as earwax, you know? You're the main guy.
Right.
You're sitting right there, and so, you know, and then after that, you know, what he should have done was take the culprit and grab him by the hand and, you know, and turn around and say, and instruct him to go to the neutral corner. Then you take the victim and you point out to the judges, you know, I'm taking away a point, okay? And you get between the, that's what I'm talking about, position. You get in between the two fighters, and then you finally go ahead and let them get back in. He let the two fighters go so that the first time was a kissing party with Ortiz.
Right.
The second time, he came back and tried to do some. You know, Ortiz is on the floor there, you know, looking like Lindsay Lohan in a Drunken Stupor, you know, wearing a set of shorts and being topless.
Right.
Hi, David. I'm glad you're with me now. That's good, man.
I couldn't agree with you more, man, about that. You know,
so that's what I had the premonition on, you know, on the refereeing and stuff. And I called that before the fight even started.
Right.
And I thought, you know, Joe Cortez was going to be a factor, and it played itself out that way. You know, but again, if I'm wrong, I don't mind saying I'm wrong either, you know. I mean, I called the Lucien Boutet, Kevin McKee fight, and I did that for Top Rank, and I told Alan Massengill that it was going to be an uppercut with the left hand by Boutet that was going to end the fight. Boom, sure enough, 10th round, uppercut. You know, and Alan said to me, Benny, I've never worked with somebody that not only told us the punch, but when the punch is going to land.
Wow.
Well, I think tendencies is something that people don't really look at. And I remember when it was like the night before I was in Vegas for Ortiz Mayweather. It was the same thing. When we all heard it was going to be Joe Cortez, I was telling anybody who would listen, I was like, it's going to be a problem. He's going to,
right.
You know, because to me the big fight was Khan Maidana that Joe Cortez seemed to really get involved.
There you go, there you go. Yeah, exactly, Gabriel. That's it right there.
Yeah, he didn't need to be involved when Maidana had Khan hurt, and he was breaking him in inappropriate times, and there was
yep.
no reason for it. And I don't really understand. I found it ironic that was the time when the same year that they elected him to the International Boxing Hall of Fame. I guess it was the Lifetime Achievement Award. But I'm curious, what's your take on Agbeko Maris? How do you see that fight? Because I think that's as much of a 50-50 fight as the Cotto Margarito fight, if not even more so.
Exactly. And, you know, to me, fights like that I love. Because, you know, to me, that's what it's all about. You know, the best should meet the best. And the
right.
best should meet their best at their prime. You know, as much as, you know, Manny Pacquiao is a great, great fighter. I mean, really, let's be honest. How many guys in their prime has he faced? You know, Marquez is 38. Before that, he fought, you know, Mosley, who's like, I think, 52 or something like that.
Right.
And, you know, he was going to get that nice, you know, payday, $9 million bucks. You know, actually, Mosley's 39. I was only kidding about that. I know David was laughing. So. Anyway, so then you go, before that, who did he fight? Margarito coming off of, you know, the suspension and having to fight a clean fight. Before that,
right.
he fought
Miguel Cotto.
With Brody, Chacho Quadi, who I'm still waiting for him to throw a punch.
Right.
And, you know, and then, you know, Mayweather, I mean, because of La Jolla. I mean, why didn't he fight, you know, the Ortiz? Why didn't he fight, you know, the
Bradley
guys in their prime at that particular, you know, in the welterweight division? Then it'd be a little bit different. I mean, he's racked up quite of an impressive record, but are any of those guys legitimate number one contenders in that weight division? If he claims the 154, why doesn't he fight Sergio Martinez?
Man, you know what? We've been saying that for the longest time here on Leaving in the Ring, you know? You know, my whole thing with Manny in these eight, you know, weight classes he's moved up, and me and Gable have talked about this many times here, is that, you know, the big key question from, I guess, from the Pacquiao fans are like, well, name me one fighter that's been successful in moving up in weights like that. And I normally would tell them, I can't really name one, because the guys that really did try to move up in weight, the one that always comes into mind is when Tito Trinidad decided to leave 147 and go to 154 and 160, he fought the best. He fought the available guys that were in their prime. And he tried to go after Bernard Hopkins, and then his goal was to go at 175, but it was stopped because he fought guys that were in equal level with him and that were real champions, you know, where Manny has basically been he's been matched perfectly to establish himself to get titles in different weight classes, you know, and that's where everything gets fuzzy for me calling him an all-time great.
Hey, well, you know, you hit a great point. Let me tell you something, David and Gabriel. Bruce Trampler is probably the greatest matchmaker that ever lived.
Yes.
Start for first and foremost. I mean, God, what he's done for Bob Arum is amazing. You know, so he really knows what he's doing when it came to the matchup. And, I mean, you know, it's been a great, from a marketing standpoint, it's been phenomenal. Because all these guys had names. They have names. Okay, are they in their prime? David, you're absolutely right. No, they're not. Okay, so now, let's go back to another name. You go back and say, like, Roberto Duran. You know, as a lightweight, at 136, I think Roberto Duran is probably the greatest 136-pounder that ever fought. Okay?
Right.
And he went up to face Sugar Ray Leonard, who was at the top of his game, and that was a great fight, the first one, and he ended up winning that. Then in the rematch, you know, Sugar Ray did the smart thing, you know, to fight him as quickly as possible, knowing Roberto was going to go back to Panama and party for the next, you know, 3 months straight, you know, would have trouble with the weight and everything else, so he ended up getting that win. That was a no loss. Then even beyond that, look who he, you know, Durant fought. He fought Hearns at the top of his game. He fought Hagler at the top of his game. But those are legitimate guys in that particular weight division. And that's why I'm not seeing that from Manny Pacquiao.
Right.
You know, and, you know, to me, Manny Pacquiao is so unbeatable, even politicians can't beat him.
Yeah.
Seriously.
You know?
Well, you almost get that with Floyd, too, though. I mean, since he left 135, his matchmaking, it's like he learned from, you know, from Bob Arum how to promote himself. And and then he learned from Bruce Trampler how to matchmake. I mean, I think they're both kind of getting the most out of what they've got, taking on guys that are, you know, I guess Ortiz was close to prime, but he was young and inexperienced and very flawed. And the one flaw we all knew he had was the right hand, and sure enough, that's what he ate all night. And we also knew the other flaw was he had mental issues in terms of his focus, and sure enough, he lost his focus and got knocked the hell out.
I knew he was going to get really frustrated with Mayweather, because I think the most astonishing thing about Mayweather, if you fought him, is not the way he hits you, but the fact that you can't hit him.
Right.
Right. And that, you know, he's got quickness. Let's take another two names right now. You take Canelo Alvarez, and you take Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. You know what I'm saying? They got to fight each other now. Fight each other now, and you're going to get three mega fights out of those guys. Because, you know, once you get them out of that comfort level, I mean, do you really think that either one of those guys could beat Sergio Martinez?
No.
And then for that matter, you know, if you look at what Jose Sulaiman did, Sulaiman, you know, said, no, Martinez and Sebastian Zvick was not going to be the fight. So instead he said, you know, Sergio's got to step aside, so then he lets Julio fight the same day.
Right.
And all of a sudden he thinks that's fine. Okay, so why isn't the first defense for Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. against Sergio Martinez since he stepped aside? You know what I mean? That should have been, but no, I mean, I understand, you know, they're marketing him, you know, the first Mexican to be the middleweight champion of the world. That's why, to me now as a broadcaster, all those titles are so hollow.
Right.
You know, because they don't have the meaning for me that they should have. I mean, Eric Morales wins his fourth title against a 20-year-old kid who, you know, is not even in the top 10. Or
exactly.
Top 20, or top 30.
For Broner this weekend fighting a guy you'll never see again.
Yep.
You know, and now we call him 130-pound champion. It is.
Exactly.
I mean, I understand the need for them because they make more money as soon as they get a title, and that's how they get on TV. But at the same time, for your casual fan that's watching, it's like every week's a championship fight, and it doesn't mean anything anymore. You know who's at fault there, though?
Gabriel's television. We're at fault there. You know, because we feel like we can't just call a fight to call a fight, but yet, you know, we have to have a title. But then if you go back, I guess, you know, look at three great fights between Mickey Ward and Arturo Gatti. Were they fighting for a title? No. And it didn't matter.
No, it didn't matter.
And you know, remember there for a while, Marco Antonio Barrera, he didn't have a title.
Right.
Yet he was still fighting all the top guys. I love that. Because at the end of the day,
Kirkland and Gula just recently, that wasn't for a real title. It was for like a, you know, it was a semifinal double secret sort of, you know, number one contender kind of fight. But that didn't matter. It's really, to me, like people look at Floyd Mayweather versus Manny Pacquiao as a fight to save boxing, quote unquote. To me, great fights are going to save boxing. I don't care if they're for a title or what they're for, if they're on pay-per-view or not. Great fights will sustain us and into forever. And
yep.
You know, I don't think there's any question of that.
I mean, let me put it this way. Do you even know what title Manny Pacquiao has? And the other big question is, does it matter?
Yeah, no.
No, it don't matter.
Does anybody ever make him fight for a mandatory? When's the last time that Floyd or Manny was made to fight a mandatory for any of their belts? They're allowed to take off as much time as they want, fight whoever they want, and they never get stripped. It's all about the dollars at the end of the day.
Exactly.
Unless it's Timothy Bradley, and then Sulaiman does take away his title.
Yeah.
And gives it to Eric Morales.
Or Sergio Martinez.
So that's what I'm saying. So, yeah, I mean, so the politics of the title part, and at the end of the day, what does it really do for a fighter except take money out of his purse? I mean, do these guys get benefits? I mean, do they get a pension? Do they get any of that stuff? And the answer is no.
No.
I mean, you know, the WBC found out when that, what's the guy, Russell Chani, whatever, ended up suing him. And the next thing you know, Sulaiman is like, you know, crying and resigned and everything because he was going to have to pay all the, you know, the damage and stuff on that lawsuit.
Right. I'm curious, too, that there's, you know, the big debate now in boxing is the drug testing, and that we all want clean athletes. And do you think that's as big of an issue as all the other things, the belts and the corruption and, you know, things like Larry Cole and all those people. Do you think we're kind of barking up the wrong tree, or is it a tree that needs to be barked up as well?
You know, there have been so many advances, you know, in nutrition and all that kind of stuff. I mean, the prime example is Juan Manuel Marquez. You know, Juan Manuel Marquez ended up using the guy that was one of the Falco guys. In fact, he was the guy, Angel.
Right.
I guess his name is Angel Hernandez.
Memo.
You know, who
Freddy.
Ended up... Yeah, he's the guy that ended up turning in, you know, Nick...
Victor.
Conti, Victor Conti, yeah, the Falco guy. And, yeah, now he's come back and, you know, they've got a lot of great natural stuff. I mean, I was just back in New Jersey when I was back over there in the studio at CBS when I did the Thanksgiving Day game between the Cowboys and the Dolphins. And they have a chamber now that a lot of these, you know, fighters now use it. Novak Djokovic used it during the U.S. Open. Well, you go in there and this thing can do like an altitude training. It's the same as going at 20,000 feet. You know, and then bring you back down to 9,000 feet and, you know, back and forth. So it's almost like you running like 20, 30 miles.
Really?
And but yet this is all done naturally, okay? So now you've got, you know, the testing, which, you know, the Olympic testing, and you've already seen where players, I mean, where fighters, you know, were dirty, but yet some of the stuff didn't come on the test. I mean, Mosley never tested positive for anything, yet he was one of the Falco guys.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that, you know, when he beat De La Hoya the second time, he was, you know, he was juiced up. So I think that, you know, I mean, I think they should be tested, you know, and I don't think there's a problem with that. I mean, it doesn't hurt anything, you know, to go ahead and get a clean bill of health and that stuff. And I think it's good for these fighters to understand what is the long-term effect of those kind of things. And, you know, when you see the guys, you know, checking out early and stuff, you know, that's, there's something to be said for that. Do you really want to do this to your body, or do you want to go ahead and, you know, go the natural way and seek methods like this, you know, chamber, you know, which increases the oxygen in your system, and, you know, rely on guys like Alex Ariza and then that Angel guy who can really reconfigure a body just by understanding the muscles and then varying the exercises that someone does so you don't do the same thing all the time.
Yeah, I mean, to me, we're just entering into a strange period where you're seeing science and advances, you know, move guys forward, but then there's that line. You know, like even Victor Conte talks about how, you know, for years and years he was, I think it was like 15 years, he was clean in the sport, and then when he started to see everybody else kind of advance, he decided, you know, well, the difference between the top guys and where I'm at is going on that onto what he calls the dark side. And so
right.
He started to go there. Personally, I think we really do need to kind of move into some sort of more education, certainly more testing, and really find out if these guys are clean. Or we need to just go the other way, and this is kind of a radical idea, just let them all juice and just say, you know, just let us know what you're taking. And just go for it, you know.
Yeah, regulate it, you know.
Yeah, and just regulate
it. Well, it's very evident that the testing or not detecting, because how can Mosley not have that thing been detected that he was on that stuff? So you just wonder how thorough the testing is to this day.
Well,
yeah, that's the thing, and you know, my question with like USADA and all those guys is exactly what are they doing. And to me, it's kind of like the drug war, you know, where they kind of let certain things through, they don't let other things through. They focus in on the wrong drugs while they let the right drugs kind of go through, or the drugs that are really the problem. Those kind of slip under the radar. There's a lot of positioning here from USADA, from WADA, and we have another group, VADA, is entering into the mix, and everybody's kind of offering different bill of goods in terms of what they're going to test. I think we're really entering into kind of a new age in this sport regarding the testing, you know, and I think fans too, there's a lot of misinformation and a lot of things that people don't understand. And so I think, you know, there's probably the next couple of years here, we're going to see some major changes. But I think the biggest thing is that people are actually going to get educated about what it is they're talking about.
Yeah. You know, cause so many fans just think that it's just a prick in the arm and then that's it. You know, they're not really understanding what everything, you know, it's not just one particular drug. It's has to be one or two mixers or three mixers in order to make those type of enhancements or those things that are kind of being slipped under the door be active, you know, and that's what a lot of fans are not understanding. They're misunderstanding that they're thinking steroids. It's not. It's enhancements.
But, you know, let me tell you something. How far back does steroids go back? I grew up in the barrios of Newport Beach, California, and the tough part about growing up in the barrios of Newport Beach, well, I was playing Pop Warner football, okay? By the way, that was a joke, guys, about barrios of Newport Beach.
Hey, I'm not from there. Hey, Benny, I'm not from there, so I don't know. You know, they say there's barrios all over the place, so I don't know.
thinking about it for a second.
$2 million homes, you know.
Yeah.
But you know, when I was playing Pop Warner football, we had a doctor. His name was Dr. Poff, and he was prescribing. This is I was like, you know, in sixth grade. He was prescribing to the players, Dianabol, and he called it growth pills.
Really?
So, you know, these guys were juicing up way back, you know, when I was in sixth grade.
Wow.
And it was amazing the quick, you know, growth that they ended up producing, you know, the definition in the body and stuff. But I always remember that. And I thought, you know, but that's the difference. You know, in Newport Beach, see, they had the sophisticated stuff. And this guy was able to get away with prescribing that stuff to the players.
Wow, that's crazy.
In Pop Warner football, mind you.
That's crazy. Yeah. I mean, that's also where it's that's the other problem is it is starting to happen younger and younger and younger and that's another problem. And these guys don't understand the long term effects. You don't need to be taking those kind of drugs when you're a little kid. You know.
No.
Gabriel, it's like this though. You know, it's kind of like with these 23-year-old guys that are playing in the NFL that come in. They think they're going to be 23 their whole life. You know.
Right.
They don't realize. They're going to eventually, that body's going to break down, and it breaks down a lot faster when you're on the juice and all that stuff. So then what happens is they get that feel like if I'm in a fight and the other guy has a baseball bat, do I pick up a baseball bat too, or am I going to try to fight him fairly?
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's a choice to make. So the NFL does not have a growth hormone test.
No.
So that's what's being addressed now. On how they come up and they can come up with a test. Because believe me, it's not prenatal care or mother's milk
right. That's
producing guys with that kind of size.
No, well, you're absolutely right. I mean, these guys are taking it to the next level of dare to be great. Don't you think, Benny?
What's that?
I said these guys are really taking it to the next level of the term dare to be great.
Well, without exactly, because at what expense?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you look at Sammy Sosa. I mean, look how fast that guy faded out of the league.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They burn
short, though. That's very true.
Yeah. Sammy Sosa is still my favorite guy to interview, man. We interviewed him at the All-Star game, and we asked him what it was like playing in Wrigley Field. And Sammy says, well, you know, about you know, Chicago Cubs, you know, the Wrigley Field, the Baltimore, you know, the Latin. A lot of time I met, you know, Yusty Baker, he said to me, you know, that you'll go around and put away, you know, like, come out of the river, you know, come out of the Ivy, the Chicago Cubs. And, you know, a lot of time, you know, put down, you know, Kerry Wood, a pitcher, you know, come out, you know, they're booking around. But nobody knows what to ask him next because he might have covered it already.
that's almost like interviewing Joseph Abeco.
That's why when I do interviews, man, I'm dangerous with that stuff because you'd be surprised what I end up saying for those guys. Because you know, have you ever seen those guys at the interview from the guys at HBO and all? None of them are interviewing. If you know Spanish, none of those guys are interviewing exactly. You know, saying what the guy's actually saying.
Never. They never. Even in the corners, they don't even translate what the guys are saying in the corner. You know.
And see, that's the beauty when you heard my broadcast. See, I'm translating exactly what the guys in the corner are saying.
That always drives me crazy.
When I do my stand-up, I always tell people, I say, my name is Ben Ricardo, or basically I'm the reason you now have to press one to get English. I said, but you know, the good thing about speaking Spanish is when I press one to get that English, I don't understand. So it's better for me to go to Spanish.
Right.
Because you know, before
funny.
You know, you get some guy Pakistan someplace. Said, welcome to the Rising. Can I help you? You know. I said, no.
Absolutely.
That's why we use our own translator on the show, you know, because it does drive me crazy. And I remember we did the when Margarito did his very first interviews for his comeback fight against Garcia, and you know we hadn't seen him in a year, and so naturally we didn't want to talk about a tune-up fight. We wanted to talk about the hand wraps.
Yeah,
and
right.
They had Ricardo Jimenez was there, nice guy, but
terrible translator.
He was clearly changing our questions. He wasn't giving us the answers that Tony was giving. And it turned into a near-violent situation where everybody was kind of yelling at each other, and it was ugly. And that's why, you know, when I came on this show, we started to use Muzi, who's our translator, and she's from Puerto Rico. She speaks very high-level Spanish. She speaks excellent English, and she does it word for word because I think the fans get robbed out of some good interviews. And I remember when Trinidad got stopped by Hopkins, and I was watching it, a replay with my family, and my mom, who's a big boxing fan, was watching it, and they were translating Tito's post-fight interview, and she's like, that's not at all what he just said, you know, and I think fans get shortchanged. I appreciate that, Benny, that you go the extra mile for us.
No, absolutely, and then it's funny, though. I mean, you talk about Spanish is an easy language to learn. I mean, and prime proof is that Puerto Ricans can speak it. So, you know, that's prime proof that it's...
No, Benny! We got a lot of Puerto Rican listeners here, man. You know what? They're going to give you the first class ticket to go to Madison Square Garden. You're going to be the first Mexican thrown off the balcony watch.
It's a joke! No, because my announcing partner at ESPN was Alvaro Martin, who's Puerto Rican. I always kid him about that. I said, man, this prime proof that Spanish is simple, man. Puerto Rican is
here.
Oh, no. Oh, I could just, Benny, I could just see the rest of my night right now explaining that it was a joke to all the Puerto Rican listeners right now for the rest of my night. So thank you, buddy.
No, hey, let me tell you something. I love Puerto Rico. I go back down there and those guys are all my buddies, all the way from Iván Calderón to, you know, Juanma López. I love Juanma, man, the way, you know, he fights and all that. So believe me, I'm cool as far as, you know, what I've done down there on the island. I love that island.
So what's
a joke is a joke, man.
Yeah.
Humor first, safety second.
Let me give you one I just wrote. Well, you know, because see, as comedians, when we write a joke, the key to laughter is to have that unpredictable, you know, sequence at the very end or the close. That's what we call deviation.
Uh-huh.
So now, to give you an example, okay, so two Irish guys walk into this bar. No, really, it could happen. See what I mean? That's like a comics joke.
Right.
You know, and then the other one is like, you take a, I had a guy come to my door. And he knocks on my door. I said, can I help you? He said, yeah, I'm a Jehovah's Witness. I said, well, that's great. Come on in, sit down. So I said, what do you want to talk about? He goes, heck if I know. I've never gotten this far before. Because no one's ever written a line for them once you get inside the house. You know, it's always been at the door.
I'm going to tell that one to my dad. He's a Jehovah's Witness. Every time he knocks on my door, I always yell at the door. I say, we're Catholics here. Go away. He goes, but it's me, your father. Again, go away.
Oh God!
So, what's your take on the Wallach and Rodriguez? Let's get out of the hot seat a little bit here, Betty. Let's talk about the fight.
What are you talking about? After making that joke, I'm going to be in a fight here.
Definitely. So, rematch. We're going to see the same thing again. What happened on ESPN or? Are these guys going to come in a little cautious? I'm saying that maybe Rodriguez may come in a little bit different, but Wallach is just going to come the way he normally comes. It's that tough, blue-collar, come-to-fight type of guy.
You can't change these guys. They're going to make the same fight. You know, that's the thing you understand. When they get evenly matched fighters, believe me, there's no way that you can make that drastic a change in your style or go away from all those things. Because you got to understand, these guys have built up to hours and hours and hours in the gym. They've built up a style. And it's not going to change. And that's the key to matchmaking. That's what the matchmakers realize and see.
Right.
You know, and it's not something that's going to all of a sudden change overnight where someone's going to get quick overnight. No. You know, they are what they are, and the speed is what it is. And you know, a lot of it, you know, the thing will change around in this particular fight. I think it's going to be when they get within what I call the kill zone, which is that area where they can throw, the shots. And it's the guys that can get there first and maintain his concentration stuff, you know, to stay active once they get in that kill zone. That's the stuff where you get two evenly matched guys, it becomes a difference in a fight.
Right.
And just look for that. Just look for that. When they get within range, you know, how they end up firing from there and who's on that night.
Yeah, I mean, I really want this fight to just, you know, in so many ways, I think this we're going to end up seeing the same thing, just kind of like what we saw. Maybe not that much action, maybe with a little bit more adjustments on Rodriguez's end, but I think we're going to end up with the same type of scenario, you know. Totally the same.
Don't bet on the adjustment. The adjustments, you know, go in one ear and go right out the other ear, because by the time they lace it up and they get in front of each other, hey, they do what they do best.
Yeah, absolutely, you know. My whole thing is that I think that this time it doesn't end in a draw. There's definitely got to be somebody walking away as the winner, you know. So that's what's going to make this one a little bit different.
I'll give you a classic example. If you go back to the Arguello prior fight, you wouldn't think Arguello would have adjusted, right? No.
Right.
It was what it was, you know, and then back to that same thing. And they could have fought like 100 times, it would have been the same thing.
Yeah, and you know what, and Alexis thought that the first time around that it worked for him, you know. You know what's funny, Benny, and you just brought up a good point. When Alexis Arguello was accusing Aaron Pryor of having something in the rematch, walking into that fight, that was the whole scenario of whether or not Aaron Pryor was cheating. This is almost the same thing with Miguel Cotto and Antonio Margarito, you know.
Right.
We may end up seeing again, but this time Miguel Cotto on his butt a little earlier because of the whole fact that Alexis, it was more mental where, like my co-host Gabriel was mentioning, that punch, when it lands, what is the mental state going to be there? Is he going to go like, damn it, you know what? I still feel the same punch. I still feel the same pressure.
You know, that's a great point, David, because if you remember that Arguello fight, I've never seen anybody take a punch where the back of his head snapped against his, you know, against, you know, his back.
It was his tailbone.
And yet the guy wasn't going down. And that's the psyche of a fighter is so fragile that when you sit there and you go, you know what, I turned over that punch. I landed that. I put his head, you know, almost so it almost touched like his rear end, and the guy's still upright. What more do I need to do?
Right.
And then what's plan B after that? There is no plan B.
No. No, plan A was the glove landing. Plan B was the punch running through, you know? So
exactly. Once you do all that, what more can you do?
Exactly.
So, you know, whether that magic bottle had the magic ingredient, who knows? But the bottom line is I've never seen anybody take a shot like that and not go down.
I know. I mean, you know, Aaron Pryor's head snapped back so far, it looked like he was looking for his wallet, you know? That was a pretty nasty shot. Well, Benny, thank you again, man, for coming on and speaking to us here on Leaving in the Ring. You know, as Benny Ricardo here with us. If you haven't had a chance to listen to Benny, here's your chance to listen to him. It's hilarious, and he definitely gives us some great insight in boxing at his home in, what is it, Newport Beach, you said? And the body was of Newport Beach?
Sí, señor, en los barrios. Barrios in Newport Beach. Where our low rider in Newport Beach is a Porsche. The very first car I bought when I was playing in the NFL was about a Ferrari, right?
Yeah.
My mother said to me, Benny, isn't that a bit extravagant? I mean, a Ferrari, shouldn't you be worrying about a place to sleep? I said, Ma, you drive a Ferrari, you don't have to worry about a place to sleep.
Yeah. No kidding, man.
Stay at her house.
Yep, stay at her house, and everybody else's house.
That's it, man.
All right, Benny. Well, thank you again,
brother.
What's
your next gig, Benny? When can we see you do? Where can we see you do stand up?
Well, I'm going back to do the Cotto Margarito fight, and then the week after that, I go to Montreal, or as they pronounce it, Montreal, to do a fight there. And that's going to be on Fight Now, which is a new channel that we've launched, which is an all fighting channel. And right now, you know, it's mostly back on the East Coast. Eventually, it's going to get to the whole, you know, United States and stuff. You're going to be able to catch it on Verizon and all that.
That's you, Benny?
And, and then the week after that, then I'm going to be in doing the Amir Khan fight against Lamont Peterson in Washington, D.C. So that should be a lot of fun. I just came back from Russia, too, where I did the the Fedor Emelianenko fight against Jeff Monson, and Vladimir Putin was there, and you know, at the fight, and he's good friends with Fedor, and Putin is what do you call? He's a master in sambo, combat sambo.
Mm-hmm.
So I blew a lot of smoke, you know, Putin's way, where I said, you know, the GDP was increased by 72%. He brought down poverty by 50%. I said, so maybe you need a guy like that that can take down politicians and better the economy.
Well, man, there you go. I mean, you're an amazing person, brother. That's all I got to say.
Hey, I don't need a visa anymore now when I go to Russia. I'm cool.
Hey,
I'm gonna need one when I go to Puerto Rico, though.
Yeah, you are. You definitely are. And that fight channel, I've been checking it out, and I didn't know that you had anything to do with that. So I'll have read.
Yeah, Fight Now, Mike Carroll, and then Channel Zero is Cal Griffin is the guy, you know, behind it. You know, great guy who's launched a very successful. It's called Channel Zero, which they do a lot of the films and all that stuff. But you know, 98% of the promoters out there.
Mm-hmm.
Gabriel and David have no outlet where they can put their stuff out there. And that's what Fight Now is going to come in and provide the opportunities for those guys right there to go ahead and be able to air their shows and their libraries and all that. Really get a chance to build some stars. You know, I'm sure that, I don't know, maybe you guys didn't do it, but I got hooked into boxing through my dad and all that stuff, and we traveled all the world. But I remember Wide World Sports was a place where, you know, you first got to see the stars, and eventually it became pay-per-view, you know, stars and stuff. And I think that, you know, nowadays with HBO and Showtime and all that stuff, sometimes you get those guys on a little bit too soon before you build up, you know, this star thing. And that's why the Fight Now is going to give a lot of those promoters a chance for them to go ahead and show. Like Thompson Boxing, for instance, I think that's a great company.
Yes.
You know, it'll give a chance now to go ahead and show those kids that they have there under contract and, you know, make them the stars that, you know, they deserve to be. And that's what the Fight Now is going to do. And we have no interest in any of the fighters. We don't care. We just want the best fight. And that's why I think, you know, the fighting business should be. The best should fight the best, and may the best man win. Who cares about the red corner, the blue corner? None of that stuff. You know, just lace them up. Let's do it. Let's see who wins.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I'll get in touch with you because I wanted to speak to you about that channel. But, Benny, I'll let you go, though, brother. You know, I know you're a busy man, and I appreciate you taking the time to speak to us here on Leaving the Ring. It's always fun when you come on.
No, my pleasure and stuff. And I hope I was a little bit serious during the broadcast so I can give you some answers to some of that stuff. But,
you certainly did, man.
Oh, Gabriel David, thank you very much. It's been a blast, and I look forward to being with you guys again.
Okay. You take care.
A pleasure.
Have a good night.
Take care.
All right. Enjoy the year.
There you go. Benny Ricardo, man, if you had a chance to listen. It wasn't an interview. It was actually him coming on and just giving us his breakdown. But we got a little bit more than just that when you get Benny Ricardo on the show with us. Anyways, Gabriel Montoya, are you ready for our fight schedule? And then I think we still need to make our predictions of what's going to happen Saturday night.
I am ready.
Actually,
in a few minutes, there's going to be some fights happening at the Club Nokia. Hugo Centeno is going to make his main event debut, taking on David Lopez out of, I believe, Indiana. 10-0 versus 3-6-3. But don't let the record fool you with David Lopez. I've seen him fight live a couple times. This kid comes to fight, man, and despite, you know, he's kind of a road warrior, and that's at least one of those losses I saw live, and I thought he actually won the fight, but they gave it to the other guy. So that's going to be a good fight. That's happening, I think, here pretty soon, about the next 15 minutes. December 2nd, Friday night, at the SAP Arena in Meinheim, Germany, Felix Sturm, 36-2-1, versus Martin Murray, 23-0, for the WBA middleweight belt. It's Germany. It's Felix Sturm.
Sturm. I'm going to say that.
At the Chumash Casino in Santa Ynez, California, on Showtime's Showbox, the next generation, or the new generation, rather, Anthony Durrell, 23-0, versus Renan St. Just, 23-2-1. Underneath that in support, Chris Avalos, 19-1, versus Jonathan Romero, 19-0.
I'm really excited seeing Chris Avalos back into the ring. You know, Anthony Durrell is Anthony Durrell.
Yeah, can you say? Kind of excited, I guess. I'm going to go Durrell. I'm going to go I'm going to go with the upset special. I'm going to go with Romero. I'm going to feel, I'm a little crazy tonight. Maybe it's the cold medicine. But I think Romero's a live dog.
And you know what? Chris has been – he's really been matched up with live dogs a lot. You know, I mean, so you could be right on this one, man. I wouldn't doubt that you got this one spot on and stuff. But I think I'm going to go with Chris, you know, just because in the past we've seen him – you know, struggle with other guys and stuff. I think he's kind of getting numb to it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, and it's also, you know, how did they build Romero? You know, he's 19-0. He's got 12 knockouts. He's from Colombia. And I believe it is his first fight out of Colombia.
So you know what though? The Colombian guys, man, even if it's the first fight, they do surprise us. It's like now we shouldn't even be surprised because these guys come out and they just make a name for themselves because they just want it that much more.
Yeah, the thing is, I mean, they look at the record though, and it's not great. You know, he's fought a lot
right.
of guys, 1-3, 3-7. He's only fought a few guys with like 20 something fights. So I mean, you know, he could be a guy that's built up, but he also could be a guy that's developed. If this kid can punch with Avalos' defense, I'm not buying it. Making his main event debut at the Fantasy Springs Casino in Indio, California, friend of the show, Randy Caballero, 12-0, versus Arturo Santiago, 7-3-1. I'm taking Randy in this
one.
I think we all know.
I think he's going to have a stoppage in this one, you know?
Yeah,
he's going to stop the guy.
I think so.
You know, I know when we had him, when we had Randy on, we talked about the guy being a veteran, meaning in age, not in boxing, but a veteran in age because he's a lot older than Randy. But the guy did start late in his boxing career, so I don't know if he knows what he's getting himself into with Randy.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, I think he's in over his head a little bit. He's going to be a veteran. It's going to be a good fight for Randy. I think the rest has done him well. I think he's going to be ready to go.
Yeah.
And December 3rd, this is a busy night for boxing. Saturday, 2011, at the Madison Square Garden in New York City, New York, at the Mecca of boxing, on HBO pay-per-view, Miguel Cotto, 36-2, versus Antonio Margarito, 38-7, for the WBA junior middleweight belt, but more importantly, for revenge and for redemption. I'm taking Miguel Cotto by decision. Dave?
You know what? I'm taking the TKO. I think the ring doctor jumps in and stops it between six and the eighth round. If not, if it goes past fourth, can I make two picks? Is that allowed here on Leaving in the Ring?
Sure.
If it goes past, you know what? If because everybody keeps talking about Steve Smoger being in this and that, he's going to allow this and that and that. I guess after if it goes past eight rounds, man, I'm going to go with Antonio Margarito. I think Margarito could pull it off again on the later rounds if Miguel Cotto gasses out. Just because that whole amateur thing, bringing in Pedro Diaz, working those legs, and the scientific of trying to get his condition and his cardio up to par what it needs to be, you can do everything to his body, but you can't heal the mind. And I think that punch, that first punch hit, Cotto's going to he's going to go back to that fetal position. So,
well,
I got two picks. You know, two picks.
Yeah.
Doctor stops the fight or Margarito stops Cotto because the doctor did not intervene or the ref.
Well, I'm going to give you two picks because it's your show. Brandon Rios, 28-0-1 versus John Murray, 31-1, and that one was his last fight, which I think is key here. I think Rios is knocking the hell out in about six or seven rounds, but it's going to be fun while it lasts.
I think a little later, man. And, you know, just because, you know, I think that Murray's going to – you saw what Brandon can do, and he also sees that you know, Brandon's going to come forward. I think the key thing that most guys have done against Brandon that's failed is move a little bit too much. You know, Brandon reminds me so much of Antonio Margarito, a come forward, but a little, he has a little bit more attitude, his arsenal. He has a little bit more finesse, I guess you can kind of say, when it comes to Brandon. You know, I know a lot of folks say he doesn't slip punches, but I think I've watched him spar, and I've seen him slip punches and pair off really well, which I was impressed, you know. So I say Murray's going to get stopped, but I think it's going to be a little later.
I can see that. I can see him like, kind of moving around. Wow, that cold medicine is hitting me. Yeah, I can see him moving around and prolonging the inevitable, but I think it's going to happen on a body shot. I think like 6, maybe 7.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
This is an interesting fight. Pay-per-view also, and support here. Mike Jones, 25-0 versus Sebastian Lujan, 38-5-2. And for a lot of people that always point to the hand wraps, and Margarito had to be using them in every fight.
Right, with the ear.
The Sebastian Lujan fight with the ear. Lujan was actually Margarito's sparring partner for this last camp. So I find that kind of interesting. This is a tough fight. Lujan has not lost, I believe, since 2007. He's been on a long streak, but it's been, you know, the kind of streak that he's been fighting the also-rans and the never-rans.
Right.
And then Mike Jones, I still think that he's probably having some trouble making that weight. I think they're really looking to get him a belt at 147. And, you know, hell or high water. And that's going to make this fight very interesting. If he can't handle the pressure and he didn't learn the right lessons from his pair of fights with Susoto Karas.
Ross, right.
He could have some troubles here with Lujan. But, you know, Lujan coming off a nice win, but I don't think that
I don't know. I don't think he is going to have. I don't think he's going to have trouble with Lujan. I'm going to tell you why. Because, you know, Soto Karas, he's already been with Soto Karas. And he experienced what happened with Soto Karas, where Lujan is being with Margarito, and he's just one of those tough, rugged guys, comes forward, tries to land the big shots. I think Mike may be comfortable with this, just because if he did, you know what, if he didn't have the chance to face Soto Karas, I would say, yeah, you know, that this is going to be maybe a style that may give him a little bit problems. But I think that they're walking into this knowing where the landmines are going to be, you know, knowing what the danger is ahead of them. So I could see Mike Jones really. I think Mike Jones stops Lujan mid rounds. I think that you know, though with that winning streak of Lujan, and he's a tough guy, but he, my thing is that he's going to be hit a lot, you know. And Mike Jones is not a small guy, you know, and he's precise and he's accurate with those punches. So I could see Lujan just going down to one knee, being overwhelmed by the bigger, younger, faster, stronger guy.
Yeah, I got Mike Jones, and I got him by TKO probably like 9 or 10. Just kind of wears him down.
Yeah, I can
maybe
see that.
Maybe catch him with something sharp early, but Lujan's a durable guy. And even though he took out Mark Mulligan in his last fight, you know, Mulligan was a guy that I never really wanted to take a mulligan on. So I never thought much of him. So it's a big win for him, but in the grand scheme of things, not that significant. Pavel Wolak, 29-1-1 versus Delvin Rodriguez, 25-5-3. I'm taking Delvin by decision. I think he learns from the first fight, and he outboxes a little smarter this time around and makes it a clearer win.
That's what I'm afraid of. That's exactly what I'm afraid of, man. I hope he doesn't. You know, Wolak has just got to just get in there again. You know, he's got to just understand he's not the boxer in this fight, which he did understand that the first time around. That big welt that he had on his face, actually that extra head, you can almost call him six-head Andrew, you know, Andrew and stuff, Andrew Lewis. I don't know if it's going to swell up like that this time. I think that water retainment, there was probably something that was being done wrong in their training camp. This time around, I think they've learned their lesson as well, but learn their lesson of trying to adjust to what Devin Rodriguez is going to do, I say no. Just get on top of him, wail at him, continue to do what you did the first time, pick it up where you guys left it off, just keep going forward, make Rodriguez run, make him waste energy, and hopefully, Wolak's condition is going to be up to par because he's going to need it for this fight. Because you're absolutely right. I think Devin Rodriguez learned his lesson and is going to go in this fight a lot more smarter than the first time around. So I'm going to pick against you. I'm going to go with Wolak. I think he takes it. I think he beats him a little bit more convincing.
All right. We have a beer on it. At the Honda Center, Anaheim, California, Showtime, Abner Matas.
22-0-1 versus Joseph Agbeko, 28-3. I'm going Modest. I believe you're going Modest.
So I'm going Modest with TKO mid round.
I'm going Modest decision. In support there, Anselmo Moreno, 31-1-1 versus Victor Chan, 37-3-1 for the WBA bantamweight belt. I'm going Moreno by decision.
I'm going to go with Vic, man. I still think that power still is going to carry it, carry him out of the situation. So I'll go with Vic. I think he could still pull it off, but I think it's going to be a real tough fight for him. We're going to really see the declining of Vic a lot more than what we've seen in late of him.
Also on this card is Eric Morrell versus Jose Silveira and Saki Obika versus Alfredo Contreras. I wonder if there's any late flights to New York.
Do I have to make a pick for those fights?
No, you don't. And you also have Carlos Molina making his return to the ring, 14-0-1 versus Manuel Lebya, 18-3. And Frankie Gomez, 11-0 versus James No Hope, 6-8-1. At the Hartwell Arena. Yeah. I really got to look into those frequent flyer miles.
Right.
At the Hartwell Arena in Helsinki, Finland, on Epics, Alexander Povetkin versus Cedric Boswell. I'm taking Povetkin. At the Robert Hellenius, he's in support. I'm trying to rush to beat the end of the show. 16-0 versus Derek Chisora, 15-1. I got Hellenius by brutal last knockout. And finally, at the Palacio del Porto, Mexico City, Mexico, Johnny Gonzalez, 50-7 versus Run this guy named Caballero, 31-10-1 for the WBC featherweight belt. And I think we all know who's going to win that one.
There you go. All right, everybody. Well, once again, it's always fun to be on Leaving the Ring. I hope you guys enjoyed the show. If you missed the guests that were on the show, you can definitely catch it right after we log off. It takes about an hour to restream. And you can catch it in the archives. We had Robert Garcia, the trainer of Antonio Margarito. And then we had Andre Berto come on to talk about his he wants his rematch with Victor Ortiz, and talked a little bit about Victor Conte. And then we had Benny Ricardo, the commentator, one of the best in the biz. If you haven't had a chance to listen to him, guy is funny as hell, but he knows a lot about his sport, boxing. Anyways, it's always a pleasure. Me and myself with Gabriel Montoya and Mr. David Chen. I hope you guys have a great weekend. Don't drink and drive. Be safe. Make sure you get home safe. And Rodrigo, make sure you wear that cape, brother, the Mexican flag cape, so we know it's you being thrown off the balcony.
And I want to give a birthday shout-out to my friend Christina. She asked me to do it. She listens to the show. And if you see me at the fights, please say hi. And as always, buy me a beer. Dave,
I'll
see you next week. Peace.
All right, brother. Hope you feel better.
Oh, me too.